In New York, food delivery workers zip around on electric bikes, adding to already chaotic streets. NPR's Bobby Allen delivered food with one of the workers to understand the challenges they face.
I meet Gustavo Ace in Lower Manhattan. He's making sure his e-bike is charged up and mounting his phone on his handlebars.
Now I'm going to connect it to the app, so I'm going to start working.
Ace's story is familiar. An immigrant from Guatemala, father of two, he got laid off from his food delivery job during the pandemic and started delivering food for apps like DoorDash and Grubhub. He says he swapped his human boss for something else.
Patron Fantasma. Patron Fantasma. It's like a ghost boss.
Ghost boss. That's what Ace and his friends call the food delivery apps, monitoring their every move and pressuring them to go faster and faster to hungry customers waiting for their orders. But he's given little support if his bike breaks or if he's robbed or injured. Last year, Ace fell after his bike wiped out on black ice. He notified the apps.
If you need assistance, we can call 911, but that's the best thing we can do for you. That's what they send to you.
How did that make you feel?
Sad, because you're working for them.
To see what it's like to work for a delivery app, I followed Ace. Our first stop, McDonald's. Someone ordered a single cheeseburger for dinner.
Oh, boy. Taking a turn now. Where are we? Church Street.
It was hard to keep up with him.
Trying now to catch up to Gustavo. I'm being powered by my legs, and he's got an e-bike that goes up to 30 miles an hour, so it's got a bit of an edge on me.
Biking in Manhattan is always a little hectic, but especially so when you are flying.
We just had to curve around a parked ambulance. There is a bus that nearly hit us a few moments ago.
We arrive at a condo building, tell the door guy what we're doing.
There you go.
Go up to the 8th floor and knock on the door of the person who ordered the burger by tapping on his phone a few times. And we're off to the next delivery. But things don't always go this smooth.
When the customer sees their bill from like Grubhub or DoorDash, you know, they see different fees and costs of the items and the tip. But what's not listed on the bill is the human toll on the worker.
Du Jun Lee is an urban studies professor at Queens College who has extensively studied the city's delivery workers.
What they have to pay out of pocket, the robberies and assaults that they experience, the broken leg that they got while delivering.
A recent survey of 500 delivery workers conducted by the Workers' Justice Project and Cornell University found that more than half have gotten into an accident or crash while doing a delivery, and about half have had their bike stolen. Ace says now during late night shifts, delivery workers will cross bridges in large packs to ward off would-be thieves.
You never know who's going to confront. You never know who's going to be trying to steal your bike. Maybe somebody with a gun.
He's never been held up at gunpoint, but the uptick in robberies and injuries led Ace to help form a group called the United Delivery Workers. They got the New York City Council to pass new protections, like finally being able to use the bathroom in restaurants they're delivering for.
Okay, this is good, but what about security? Security was the main problem on the street.
Ace wants better lighting installed on dark bridges and crimes against delivery workers to be taken more seriously. He says his message to people ordering food through these apps is this. Workers are often pulling 12, 13, 14-hour shifts for maybe $200 or $300 a night. He says they're moving as fast as they can.
They're calling you and they texting you, where is my food? And then sometimes it's not the delivery worker's problem when the food is getting to you, call.
The tech companies tout the so-called frictionless delivery services. But Ace will be quick to tell you, getting you that cheeseburger involves a lot of friction. Bobby Allen, NPR News, New York.
White supremacy is the sickness.
You can now add COVID-19 to the list of workplace safety issues the federal government is taking on. New regulations would require either weekly testing or proof of vaccination for some 100 million U.S. workers. Several Republican-led states are already threatening to defy the rule, but the administration says the regulations are part of a strategy to curb the pandemic. Here was President Biden back in September.
This is not about freedom or personal choice. It's about protecting yourself and those around you, the people you work with, the people you care about, the people you love. My job as president is to protect all Americans.
Here to explain how it will be enforced is Labor Secretary Marty Walsh. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me today.
Now, OSHA falls under the Labor Department. That's why we're speaking with you. And under these new rules, employers can either offer paid time off for vaccination and any leave needed to recover from potential side effects or they have to allow for weekly testing, but they're not required to pay for the weekly testing. Why not?
Because what we're looking at here is they have the option, and then there's other laws that govern different areas of payment potentially. What we
want to, but from the outside, it looks like you don't want that. You basically want to encourage the vaccination more than you want to encourage the weekly testing.
Well, at the end of the day, we want to encourage the vaccination, so I'd say yes to that. But also, there's also provision there for collective bargaining. There's provisions in there for other laws that govern paying of different, you know, potentially medical needs.
What is the administration doing to support businesses in terms of helping them to comply with this?
Well, you know, we're working now. We put out the standard today. We're working with businesses that have questions on it. We're going to be sending them more information about it to know how to implement this. You know, a lot of businesses have already started, begun something to this manner. You know, we chose intentionally 100 businesses with 100 more people because we knew that they had potentially the infrastructure to handle this. And we're going to answer any questions they might have.
There are some retail groups who are already saying, look, 60 days is not enough time to be in compliance. What's your response to that?
60 days. I mean, we looked at the timeline and OSHA feels and the folks who put this together feel that that is more than enough time to be able to come up with a good, strong standard inside their businesses.
Now, the White House has said that the rule will override state and local laws, including those that might that might ban or limit an employer's authority to require vaccination, masks, or testing. What does that mean for a state, for instance, like Texas, where there is an executive order barring these kinds of vaccination rules?
Yeah, the OSHA ETS would supersede that law, and it's no different than a law in Texas that would supersede a local law. I mean, I think that's when we think about that, and that's the intention behind the emergency temporary standard. And OSHA has.
I mean, the reason why I'm asking is, 9 states are already suing the administration, right, over its vaccine requirement for workers employed by a federal contractor. You already have the Iowa governor saying she plans to take immediate legal action. The Arizona attorney general says he plans to sue. So, are you ready to spend time in legal challenges over this rule?
Yeah, of course we are. We're confident about the rule put together, and I think it's unfortunate that this rule has been out for about 8 hours now, and people already are suing on it. This is about protecting workers in the workplace. This is about protecting Americans. This is about increasing our number of people in this country that are vaccinated, and people who choose not to be vaccinated, they have the ability to be tested once a week and wear a mask in the workplace if they're around other people.
Are you equipped as a department to enforce this?
Yes, we are. We are equipped. And OSHA is equipped. They've done this several times. They have a history of 50 years of doing this.
But what does that mean? Does that mean when you're already on a site visit, you're going to add this to the list of checkoffs? Or are you going to increase site visits? I mean, realistically, what does this mean?
We're going to do both. I mean, I think we're going to do both out there. And also, we're going to be working with, you know, I think I have a feeling in talking to OSHA, we're going to have a high compliance rate here with businesses as we move forward here.
What's the benchmark for effectiveness? Meaning, how will you know if the new rule is working?
I mean, I think over time, we're going to be looking at people vaccinated, keeping track of how many people we have vaccinated. I think, honestly, if we save one life by doing this, and obviously we're going to do more than that, and we're able to protect one workplace, and we're going to do more of that as well, that's our intention. The president, as you played a little earlier, was talking about protecting American families and American people, American workers, and that's the goal behind this. This is not to be burdensome to businesses. This is not to be a problem. This is meant to continue to move us forward in the fight against the coronavirus.
In that piece of tape we played that you mentioned, the president talked specifically about the idea of this not being about freedom or personal choice. And yet for the movement against kind of what they would call vaccine mandates or government overreach, that's precisely what they concern, what their concern is, that this is an overreach. What is your response to that?
Well, the beauty is this isn't an overreach and this isn't a mandate. This is business is encouraging people to be vaccinated. And if people decide and choose not to get vaccinated.
But do you worry about a backlash effectively, right? Well, there's already that kind of movement.
I just want to finish my thought real quick. You know, they have to get tested. And again, it's about protecting workers in the workplace so the coworkers feel safe. As far as a backlash, I'm a little amazed by the overall situation we're in as a country when it comes to vaccines. Again, I think a lot of people, including myself, were excited when the vaccines were approved and people getting vaccinated. We lost almost 850,000 American lives to COVID-19. And We want to, I would love to see that, and the president would love to see that, that stop if we can. And this is one step towards that.
That's Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Elsa Chang. $100,000 a year to work 35 hours a week picking up travelers as an airport shuttle driver? That sounds pretty good, right? Maybe too good to be true? Well, that's because it is. But, you know, it is a real posting that has become ubiquitous on sites like LinkedIn and Facebook, luring would-be workers during one of the biggest upheavals in the labor market in recent history. And while this posting will not lead to a job, it will likely lead to identity theft. And it's only one of many sham job ads that have been popping up lately. Cesare Podcool is a reporter with ProPublica, and he recently did a deep dive into these fake ads. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I just want to start with that airport shuttle driver ad. You tracked one of those ads down. And can you just tell us, where did that quest lead you?
I just started taking the text of it and looking around at all the different places where it was showing up. And eventually, just by looking for it and looking for it, I saw a posting on a Nigerian scam board where people just trade messages and exchange tips on how to basically do all sorts of scams. And it was basically the script for an airport shuttle job aimed at getting people to share their driver's license, their social security number. And once they do that, to really reel them in and try to get as much as you can to basically get their personal details and use them to commit fraud.
Kind of scary, as people are looking really, really hard for jobs right now. I mean, to take a step back, how prevalent are these job ad scams right now, would you say?
So they're growing. We don't have a precise figure right now because it's sort of an emerging threat. One company that I talked with that's helping both the federal government and state governments safeguard against identity theft has been tracking them. And they saw something like 3,000 of these fake job ads in March. And as of when I talked to them just a few days before we published the story, it had grown to like 36,000. So
wow.
It's something that people really should be on the lookout for, especially now since so many people are quitting their jobs or thinking about quitting or still looking for a job.
Well, as you say, all of this is happening as there's been so much churn in the labor market. Can you talk about how these job ad scams seem to have evolved as the pandemic has worn on?
Yeah, so basically they're looking for industries like an airport shuttle driver, right? Like stuff where they think that people will think, okay, maybe airports are reopening, there's more traffic, or for example, you know, restaurants. Like another person I interviewed had fallen to a fake job ad for the restaurant chain Steak and Shake. And as we all know, right now in the restaurant hospitality industry, so many people have quit. There's just a lot of demand. And she was applying for what she thought was a graphic designer job that turned out to be totally fake. The other thing that they're doing that's really weird is they'll just email you out of the blue for a job that you didn't apply for. So these are just phishing scams, or they're sending you an email saying, here's a job, and it's not a job. It's just a phishing scam to get your personal information.
Well, you're segueing beautifully into the last question. I was just going to ask you, you know, what advice do you have for people who are out looking for a job now, of course, who do not want to get scammed? Beyond like weird, sketchy URLs, are there any other particular red flags that you can advise people to try to spot?
Yeah, so probably the most important thing is, you know, be wary of job ads that are touting the need to verify your identity up front, like right at the outset. And then, you know, and there's a bunch of other things, right? Looking at the URL, looking at the job posting, seeing who's posting it, Googling the text of it. Does it show up all over the internet in different places, right? But probably the most important thing is just to not ignore that voice, that little voice in your head that you hear sometimes when something feels off. At the very least, get a second opinion from maybe your husband, your wife, a loved one, a friend. Ask them like, hey, is this right? Should this person be asking me? Should I be giving them that information? And if they say, hey, you know, that seems weird, or if it just doesn't feel right to you, you know, walk away. There's plenty of jobs out there right now. The last thing you need to do is to get scammed.
That is ProPublica reporter Cesare Podcool. Thank you very much for your reporting.
Thanks for having me, and good luck job hunting, everyone.
There's a term floating around to refer to this month.
Striketober.
Striketober.
Some have dubbed Striketober.
After workers at all of the Kellogg Company's U.S. cereal plants walked off the job this week.
Thousands have gone on strike at food plants.
A wave of walkouts by American workers this month of October.
Workers are demanding better wages, better working conditions, and more benefits. This comes as Americans have spent more than a year working during a pandemic with long hours and increased health risks, all while corporate profits continue to grow. At the same time, employers of all kinds are struggling to fill jobs, and millions of workers are quitting in what some have called the Great Resignation. And these striking workers, well, they're getting attention. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh talked to striking Kellogg workers in Pennsylvania. Local news outlets, including Lancaster Online, covered the visit.
I want you to know that you know, we are watching. You do have support.
There are strikes each and every year, but the kind of pressure a strike can exert seemed to be diminishing a few decades ago, like in 1981, when American air traffic controllers walked out.
This morning at 7 a.m., the union representing those who man America's air traffic control facilities called a strike.
That is then-President Ronald Reagan. Ultimately, he decided to play hardball with the striking controllers.
It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
More than 11,000 air traffic controllers were officially fired. Major strikes have declined since then. So we wanted to know, why is Striketober happening now? Why does it seem like so many American workers are either striking or threatening to strike? To help us answer those questions, we've brought in Joseph McCartan. He's a professor of history and the director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. Professor McCartan joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, Elsa.
Hi. So tell us, why exactly are we seeing so many strikes right now in particular?
I think it's for reasons that you've just suggested. One is that workers have just come through the pandemic, and the economy is just beginning to improve, and usually after a big crisis, and when things begin to improve, workers can become more militant. I think the fact that this has coincided with the Great Resignation is also crucial, because we've seen a tremendous upsurge in workers quitting jobs in the private sector, and that's unusual. In August, we set a record for such quits. And what I think that shows is that there's a broad dissatisfaction that workers feel, and that's giving workers who are organized, like the union workers you've just referred to, more leverage. I think the third thing is that people see now that they have an administration in power that's really openly siding with workers and even taking positions in support of strikes. It's very unusual for cabinet members to visit strike picket lines.
Okay, well, a lot of these things that you have cited, they will be in place at least for quite some time. So could that mean that we will be seeing even more strikes soon?
You know, strikes tend to breed strikes. If workers see that strikes are being effective, they're more likely to use the strike weapon. And actually, that's the reverse of what happened in the case of the PATCO strike. The PATCO strike was such a severe setback for labor that it really discouraged workers to use the strike.
And just to be clear, PATCO is the air traffic controllers that you're referring to.
Oh, that's right. The air traffic controller strike of 1981, it really set a mood in the country in which workers became fearful of striking. And that led to an almost disappearance of strikes in the private sector of this country. In 1952, there were 470 large-scale strikes involving at least 1,000 workers in the United States. Last year, there were only 8. And of those 8, only 2 were in the private sector.
Well, I'm curious because you've been studying and teaching labor history for years. And in your view, what makes this current wave of strikes significant or unique?
I think one of the things that makes it unique is the post-pandemic context. The pandemic disrupted a lot of the status quo in labor management relations in a way that only happened, I think, three times in the 20th century, after both of the world wars and during the Great Depression. It was in each of those cases, by the way, that we saw big upsurges in worker militancy. When the status quo gets upended, it changes workers' expectations. Coming out of World War II, workers had made sacrifices and they wanted rewards after the war. And I think a similar feeling pervades the American workforce today. A lot of people sacrificed a lot in the past year, the essential workers, for example. And yet they're looking at a labor market that they feel like still doesn't reward them as they feel they ought to be rewarded.
Well, when it comes to the power that strikes can exert, when it comes to the leverage that workers have, do you think that workers now actually do have more leverage in this moment?
They actually do have more leverage right now. And part of that has to do with the Great Resignation, which is showing a discontent that is tightening the labor market. What's unique about this moment, in a way, is that there is a labor shortage that many employers are complaining about, but it's a labor shortage that's largely worker-driven. Workers have been withdrawing from the labor market in dissatisfaction with the jobs that they currently have. We still haven't returned to the job levels we had before the recession.
Yeah.
We're at about 80% of what we had before COVID struck.
So interesting. But then how long can that leverage last? Like, could this Striketober stretch into a month's long wave and have maybe even long-term impacts?
It could. It could last for quite a while. The militancy that came up after World War II went on for more than a year. And it did have long-term consequences. The same thing after World War I. And what happened in those cases, especially after World War I, employers started to realize from the post-war strike militancy that workers weren't as happy as they thought that they were, and that the jobs needed to be improved. And employers needed to get on that program and make some improvements. And so we could possibly see that.
That is Joseph McCartin, history professor at Georgetown and director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Ebony Magazine turns 76 tomorrow, an anniversary it nearly wasn't able to reach. As NPR's Andrew Craig reports, the mainstay of Black American culture is attempting a revival and reaching back into Black history to do it.
I am America. I am the part you won't recognize, but get used to me. This Muhammad Ali quote is scrawled on the cover of Ebony Magazine's August 2016 issue. It's a special collector's edition, a tribute to Ali shortly after he died. It lies on a table about 14 feet long, awash with anthologies, political pamphlets, and poetry, all by Black authors. Welcome to Fur Keeps Bookstore.
I'm Rosa, by the way. I'm not talking
to you. All the time.
Hi. Very nice to meet you.
Owner Rosa Duffy collects Ebony magazines.
If you grew up in a Black household, Ebonies were everywhere. It's almost like, you know, first nature. So, you know, it's one of our languages.
Ebony magazine has shown the glamour and grit of Black life since November 1st, 1945, when Black entrepreneur John Johnson published the first issue. He intended it to be a Black version of Henry Luce's Life magazine. Ebony's stories and glossy photos of Black politicians, athletes, artists, models, and college students have fed the souls of Blacks for generations. Rose's friend, W.J. Lofton, was visiting the store that day.
It allows us to see ourselves and also takes the Black experience and it shares it with the world. The pages in Ebony, it's cartography.
Ebony stopped printing its magazine in 2019. And after years of financial and legal troubles, John Johnson's company went bankrupt in 2020. Milwaukee Bucks alum and Black businessman Junior Bridgman bought Ebony and its sister magazine Jet for $14 million in December 2020. Ebony has since embraced a purely digital format to reach audiences, but finds itself in a marketplace now crowded with Black stories. Clint Wilson taught journalism at Howard University and recalls a similar moment during the civil rights era.
The white press, not just the written press, but television news shows at that time, you had NBC, ABC, CBS. They were all covering stories of civil rights.
This is a CBS News special report with CBS News correspondent Walter Cronkite.
The summer of 1964 will be marked in history as the summer of civil rights.
We just lost control of our own news.
Sit-in demonstrators at a lunch counter were doused with mustard and ketchup the first day. Policemen occasionally clubbed demonstrators and used a variety of other tactics designed to break their spirit.
To Wilson, our own news means the black press, outlets like the Chicago Defender and the now-defunct Pittsburgh Courier, founded by and dedicated to black people. Wilson estimates around 200 are still around, and he says buried in the history of the black press may be clues for how to compete today.
If we go back to the founding of the black press, there was a hunger, a thirst to unify as a community.
The first black newspaper, called Freedom's Journal, was founded in 1827. Frederick Douglass launched the North Star in 1848, and Charlotta Bass took the helm of the California Eagle in 1912.
When the movie Birth of a Nation was being filmed, she was the one that alerted other black publications around the country that this film was being made. She crusaded against the film
and had some success in removing it from theaters. Abolition, voting rights, racist housing and labor practices, they were all among the many issues the black press addressed. And there are echoes of this spirit in today's Ebony and their new motto, Move Black Forward.
To generational wealth.
Michelle G. became Ebony CEO in January.
African Americans are not getting compensated, they're not getting hired at the rate in which they're contributing to the American fabric. And so we have to begin to educate, but also give people tools so that they can too begin to build their businesses. I'm flying from place to place, literally meeting small businesses. How can we help you? How can we support?
I am Kristen Breckenridge, and I am the owner-operator of Third Eye View.
Third Eye View provides affordable vision screenings, eye exams, and eyewear to the underserved. It was one of the businesses in Houston at Ebony's Block Party event, designed to highlight and empower small black businesses. There have also been block parties in Atlanta, New York, and New Orleans.
The exposure, marketing tactics, it really fostered almost a sense of pride within our people just to be working alongside with them.
Ebony isn't abandoning celebrity and entertainment, but in doubling down on content that builds financial literacy and wealth and business ownership, Brookings Institution senior fellow Andre Perry sees engagement in the fight for economic parity and mobility and a strike at racism.
Our elders used to say our ice is just as cold. They knew that our services, our goods are just as good. And so if we can remove those negative stereotypes, we can really eat at the wealth divide that currently exists.
Ebony is gambling that its new approach will make a difference and pay off for the magazine. The dice in Ebony's hand, they were carved from the bones of black activism. Andrew Craig, NPR News.
I thought I asked for an African-American to replace Terry.
You requested an Afro-American?
African-American. Jerry, you know I did. I put it in writing.
I didn't see it. You see it?
If you don't like her, you send her back.
Yeah, you tell her you didn't like her performance because she was white.
What? That's not the point.
Flipper, she's been here for 5 minutes. Give her a chance. This sounds dangerously like reverse discrimination to me.
$10 million. That's how much a federal jury has awarded a man who says he was fired for being a white male. David Duvall, a former top executive at Novant Health in North Carolina, claims he was let go in 2018 because of the company's efforts to diversify leadership positions.
No performance issues whatsoever, just out of the clear blue sky, was fired 5 days short of his fifth year when he was supposed to get a bump in severance from 12 to 18 months, given his tenure.
Luke Largess is Duvall's attorney. He argued the termination was a violation of the Civil Rights Act, which bans workplace discrimination on the basis of race or gender. Novant Health denied firing Duvall for the, quote, sole purpose of achieving diversity. In court documents, they allege Duvall was terminated for, quote, deficient performance and delegation of the critical duties of his position to his subordinates. What was you all's response to those claims?
They were complete nonsense.
In recent years, there have been several high-profile cases alleging discrimination against white workers, including lawsuits against YouTube, Google, and Starbucks. This verdict comes as calls for greater equity and inclusion in the workplace grow, and as companies aim to address historic hiring, pay, and promotion gaps that have disadvantaged minority workers.
Although there may be some discrimination against white people, most of the discrimination still dominates against black people in racial discrimination.
According to a wide-ranging 2021 report by McKinsey, white men make up 35% of entry-level employees, but are 62% of all C-suite executives. That's compared to minorities, who account for just 17% of top execs. That's why some companies are turning to consultants like Allison Manswell for help increasing diversity. What should companies be thinking about as they're working to diversify their ranks without running afoul of the laws that protect against discrimination?
If it is leading towards termination, people deserve a fair chance to correct their behavior, make any changes. We need to avoid language that starts to sound like this, meaning we have these goals that we set for 2020 and make it sound as if we're going to bulldoze our way to those goals, make illogical, unfair decisions in the process.
A spokesperson for Novant Health tells NBC News they are, quote, extremely disappointed with the verdict, vowing to pursue all legal options, including appeal, adding this verdict will not change Novant Health's steadfast commitment to diversity, inclusion, and equity for all. What message do you hope this verdict sends?
The message is not to abandon diversity and inclusion. It's to do it legally, do it lawfully.
All right, Priscilla Thompson joins us now on set. Priscilla, you were just telling me they are going to appeal this. You spoke to a lot of legal experts. Is this going to set a legal precedent?
Well, to be clear, the legal experts we spoke to say less than 10% of these race-based discrimination cases involve white people. The vast majority of them are people of color. But there is concern that this will set a precedent or have far-reaching implications for many companies that may be looking to include these diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, who say they're going to stay away from it because they don't want to face these types of allegations.
And we should also point this out for viewers. This happened in 2018. This happened pre-George Floyd, before companies tried to and started to really look at their companies, and there was the racial reckoning.
Right. And there was a movement going on prior to the murder of George Floyd, including in 2015 with the Oscars So White controversy, and in 2016 when the U.S. women's soccer team filed their discrimination suit alleging the gender wage differences. And so this is something that we've seen, and experts that I spoke with said that some of these lawsuits are pushback to folks who have been historically overrepresented in the workplace, and now these workplaces are becoming more diverse, and it can feel like discrimination when in actuality, in many cases, in most cases, in fact, the experts I've spoken with said, this is just equity.
All right. Priscilla Thompson, thank you for that.
The man, race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood.
Everything that Dan was doing that he wasn't supposed to be doing, my dad was aware.
Cameras reportedly rolling as two men went in, but it appears one never came out.
He actually turned 51 in a hole.
You're watching Oklahoma's News 4 at 10.
The body of a missing Guthrie father found buried beneath a septic tank 30 days after he vanished.
That man's boss now in custody for his murder. Tonight, the heartbroken family of Brent Mack react.
I hope Dan rots in hell. That's what I want to say.
You will pay the ultimate price.
News 4's Kaitor Kay picks up our story from there. And Kaitor, we understand Mack worked as a septic tank installer.
That's right. The family tells us Mac installed those septic tanks with his boss, Daniel Triplett, for a few years. But their relationship was pretty rocky. Now that Triplett is the main suspect, the family is stunned, angry, and devastated.
This guy he killed somebody. He killed the wrong person, and he thought he was going to get away with it.
But this Oklahoma family hit the streets, posting 50-year-old Brent Mack's photos all over Guthrie, dedicated to finding their loved one, not knowing they'd end up finding his alleged killer instead. The father of three vanished 30 days ago. Last week, Guthrie police and OSBI suspecting foul play. Thursday, they alerted Mack's family that they had found his remains.
I got the news yesterday that they found his remains, and yeah, like I said, it hit me like a ton of bricks, but I thought I was ready to know, but when it hit me, it just hit me.
Mac's boss, 66-year-old Daniel Triplett, arrested as a suspect. Mac had been working for Triplett installing septic tanks.
He worked with Dan for roughly about 3 years, and kind of a love-hate situation, I would say.
A source telling News 4, Mac's remains were found buried under a septic tank about 15 miles north of Guthrie. A nearby business also confirming to News 4 that they had surveillance video that helped in the investigation. That video reportedly showing what appears to be two men arriving at the site to do some work. But it appears only one man left.
He actually turned 51 in a hole. So you imagine his kids, how they feel about that.
While OSBI continues to work on the investigation, Mac's daughter, Rachel Wilson, feeling a range of strong emotions towards the man suspected of murdering her father.
I hope Dan rots in hell.
All while remembering the man her father was.
I'm very grateful for the time that I did get with my dad and that he did get to spend with my kids.
OSBI tells us they're continuing their investigation and a medical examiner will need to positively identify Mac and determine his exact cause of death.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, November 5, 2021. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum on neutralizing workplace racism. The number to dial, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. As always, this broadcast is not for spectators. If you have figured out any strategies, techniques, things to say that help solve problems or make some constructive things happen for you in the workplace, you can get training or things that are, you know, beneficial. Solve problems without creating new problems. If you figured out some techniques that work well, please share. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. As always, if you're having some sort of issue, problem, you'd appreciate folks trying to share some counter-racist logic to kind of help you process what's happening and figure out maybe some strategies, the best way to think, speak, act, to try to solve your situation, improve your situation. Let us know. We'll do our best. You can also drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We heard a number of reports. I'll share a few thoughts on some of the reports that we heard and then get to the callers and emails. Untiljustice@gmail.com. The last report that we heard, the suspected murder of Brent Mack, or it's not suspected, he's dead. The murder of Brent Mack, the suspected killer, white man, Daniel Triplett. This is in Oklahoma, Neely Fuller Jr. I saw the headline, black male found beneath a septic tank. I went to, you heard the details, the report, that was the last one. And just, I was, you know, it's a tempted father and underneath a septic tank. I mean, just the inhumanity of all of that. You got his children. They don't know what happened to him. And this, anyway, so I'm reading about all this. And then I was like, wow, because I was just going to include this for the compensatory calling. But I was like, wait a minute. They said it's his white boss who is the suspected murderer. Got footage of them. He had been working there for years. And in some of the other reports, his daughter and other family members, I appreciate how they did not say, we forgive Mr. Triplett. You didn't hear any of that at all from Mr. Brent Mack's family. Anyway, some of the different reports, if you investigate this case, his family members say, his daughter in particular, that Mr. Mack, he had been noting Mr. Triplett was doing incorrect things. He had been documenting that they had been having some sort of problems, conflict for some time. I don't know what the nature of the violations were allegedly or what those problems were, but they had been having some sort of problem. And they had a different witness who said allegedly on the day that Mr. Mack may have been murdered, that he saw the two, the black male and his boss, Mr. Triplett, he saw them in some sort of verbal argument. So this is workplace racism. I mean, it seems so much more than that, but I mean, this is workplace racism. He literally could have died, been killed, murdered on the job. And this could have been the culmination of who knows. They said he'd been working there for a year or so installing septic tanks. This could have been the culmination of a year, 2 years, the entire time that he worked for this white man, suspected racist, suspected murderer, the culmination of all of that. So, I mean, this is, yes, laborer, absolutely. Now, I mean, this is, hopefully nobody is in this sort of mortal danger on the job. But I think frequently this year we have emphasized safety and the importance of safety in the work environment, of things that are happening that are not safe. Black self-respect, be proactive, using your words, asking questions to bring attention to things that are unsafe, and doing as much as you can to try to minimize any danger to you first and foremost. This is acute. And we've talked about, because this seems like it might have been a small business type of an operation, if you're installing these septic tanks or what have you, where it might just be he and his boss, you know, they go out to wherever the business is, or if they're going to do work on somebody's residence or whatever it is, those two drive out in the vehicle and that sort of thing. Like, wow, we've talked to folks who I've talked about just the confined space of a vehicle, period. But I mean, wow, if you're working with somebody in those type of tight quarters and then you all are having disputes about things, or you're having to address how you're being mistreated, not being compensated correctly or whatever it is. And you all are riding together and all that, just that is really close proximity. That's the type of thing where you have to be alert. That's why I talk about when I think I'll just use somebody as an example. Bay Area mom, longtime investor. She's called bunches of times over the years. I think she and some other folks where they've shared like, wow, it seems like the work environment that you're in is really dangerous. Like, this doesn't seem like an environment where you're going to prosper a career. This seems like an environment where you might not even live for the remainder of the month of the year type of a thing. Like, get out of there. Like, sometimes the evidence is glaring that, wow, this is a really unsafe situation. Like, I need to get out of here. Like, me staying and griping and doing all this other stuff is not going to work. This is a work on my exit strategy type of a situation, like recognizing that and taking it seriously, because wow, there can be major life ending consequences, call it fatal, for ignoring, like, whoa, danger. I don't know, Mr. Mack, it seemed like he was recognizing there was a problem of some sort, but wow, white people are dangerous. That cannot be overstated. Like, really keep that in mind, especially if you're going to white people's houses or close proximity type of a thing. Like, woo, really, really dangerous. And this white fella could have been plotting this if he had the whole together and all this. My suspicion would be this wasn't a spontaneous type of a thing where they got into an argument. You didn't bring me my coffee today, or these bagels are stale, or you forgot the screwdriver or something like that. Like, this nigger has gotten on my nerves. This now I'm done with this nigger today. We already got the whole hand. But I suspect it might have been that sort of deal where he had planned and thought this out. And even because they questioned him, like, hey, do you know where Mr. Mack is? And he lied about it, said he dropped him off at the laundromat. They went and got the video camera from the laundromat and saw, no, you didn't. Suspicion right there. Man, all I can say, condolences to his family, friends. Would not wish that on any. I mean, just the, as I said, inhumanity doesn't even capture it. I can't even imagine someone that I even liked remotely, maybe met one time. I can't imagine finding out, like, what? Some terrorist killed this person and stuffed their body under a septic tank? I don't have words. Workplace, again, workplace, that's the type of thing that I normally would have put at the end of the compensatory call and, like, make it clear this is what we're talking about when they try and say discrimination or Jim Crow or white privilege. Like, no. Use accurate terms. But I mean, that is workplace racism, terrorism in the workplace. Let's see. The other reports that we heard, also important. The food delivery service drivers, that could have been a fatality right there. It seemed like they were talking to a lot of people who'd be classified as non-white, which is what they said throughout all of this. Having to do delivery work, probably for a lot of individuals classified as white, delivering a cheese. But, like, I can't even imagine. Like, a cheeseburger is like a dollar. That's on the dollar menu, I think, at McDonald's. Like, $1, $1.50 maybe. You can get a cheeseburger. I haven't had a cheeseburger in forever, plant-based. But you have to risk your, literally risk your neck. He's, you know, had accidents before and injured limbs and all the rest of it. And you don't have proper benefits. And the best we can call you a cab. We'll call 911 for you. That's about the best we can do. We'll get another. I guess, did you get the cheeseburger delivered? Okay. Yeah, we can call 911 for you. That's about the best we can do. Those, all of those type of jobs that are unsafe, like, I totally get it. If you're in a situation where you're just trying to make do and do the best that you can, but that would not be anything that I would be looking to stay too long. Like, this is a get out immediately. This is super unsafe on so many levels. Any job where I have to band together and form a gang out of risk that we're going to be robbed. Nah, I'm good. This is just a temporary thing. Let's hurry up and get that exit strategy together. Let's see, the deadline. This is one right here where I was saying, like, it shouldn't be spectators. Like, there should be a lot of folks who have thoughts about the January 4 deadline from our President Biden. So it's January 4 for major employers. They're defining major employers as 100 employees or more, where required to be vaccinated and or have testing. In some places, it will not be testing. It'll just, you have to be vaccinated. I suspect that will impact. I mean, they've said this will impact approximately 100 million employees at the beginning of the new year. They've already had all of this talk about lots of people all across the country who have been fired, placed on leave, about these vaccines. I don't know if that's going to be even more of that sort of thing happening. They've also had reports that these mandates have increased the numbers of people who've got vaccinated. Some people, you know, were grousing about this, but they complied, didn't want to go through or didn't want to have any problems, wanted to keep their paycheck. I can totally understand that. So they have said that as well, but that will be, and they've also said the lawsuits. They said that in the report that we heard, lots of white people challenging this, which we had already talked about. I have no idea how this will work out in court, but I suspect lots of folks will be impacted if this is forcing you to make a decision, forcing you to get vaccinated. Let us know. I don't know how this is going to apply to colleges and what have you as well. I know most college environments do not have vaccine mandates. They have testing and that sort of thing. So I don't know how it'll impact public universities and colleges. Let's see. The job scams that was talked about, where they're trying to fish to get people's information. I think we've had listeners who talked about having job offers mailed to them where they were not soliciting. They were not out searching. They hadn't been, you know, dropping off resumes or anything else on LinkedIn, updating them, none of that. And just out of the blue. So just be mindful. They have some tips there. And I think they have some other tips online in terms of just being cautious about the information that you share, even cautious about the information that you respond to, emails that you get. If it doesn't look reputable or you have some questions, do some homework. That's something that I talked about. Investigate if they have a website and that sort of thing where you can go and dig online to make sure that things are on the up and up. But just something to be mindful about, especially if you are job hunting, as they say. Let's see. We had the report on Ebony Magazine, another reference to Birth of a Nation. The star of that film is Gus the Renegade. The whole report where they were talking about Ebony Magazine and their, rebranding, you might say, to focus more on financial literacy and black businesses, all that. Spectacular. I would say, number one, there were a number of cows guests in that segment on Ebony Magazine. We heard from Andre Perry. He talked about negative stereotypes and the white man's ice is not colder than mine and all that. But Andre Perry was a guest on the program last year, black male. He had the saying, there's nothing wrong with black people that ending racism won't solve. From last year, he was a guest. And then we also heard in that same segment on Ebony Magazine, Allison Manswell. She wrote the book Listen In. She was a guest on the program in 2016, where interestingly, I thought the most significant point of her discussion with us, we talked all about workplace racism, was black misandry. She conceded that when she goes out and talks about being strong and confident in the workplace and exuding competence, she has to change that up when she talks to black males, because you can't be too cocky or confident or loud. If you're a black male, they might think that you are a rapist or barbarian. You might find yourself buried beneath a septic tank. Anywho, Allison Manswell, she was talking about things that are happening now. And if you're going to be terminated, to make sure that you were given a fair chance. We heard the word fair. She actually said it twice herself. I would avoid using that term in the workplace. You want just treatment, correct treatment. Those are much more accurate terms that are getting away from associating whiteness with correct treatment, which is ubiquitous throughout the world, the system of white supremacy, racism. With regards to, let's see, I do agree though with the whole, if you are going to be terminated, it would just be switching out the word fair. Has due process been followed in terms of, was I trained? Was I given an opportunity to correct mistakes? If there were flaws in my performance, did I get proper notifications so that I could get a chance to make corrections? All of that I totally agree with. All of that would fall into just policy and procedure. If you were doing something incorrectly, you should have had supervisors or management to alert you to this, to see if you needed to be retrained. Did you get trained about this in the first place? Maybe we need an initial training. But all of these sorts of process or steps in the process before we get to termination, all of that super important, and many times for non-white people, all of that is ignored. Let's see. There was the frickin' Aaron Rodgers. This is not sports talk radio, but ooh-wee. The situation with Aaron Rodgers has me so intrigued. I could talk about that for a long time because that's all workplace racism. He lied about his test status and all this. There was a report that was done by William Roden, who is a black male. He wrote $40 million Slave. I think retired firefighter and many others are familiar with him. But he was asked about all this. It is fascinating for so many reasons. In fact, Aaron Rodgers, the white quarterback for the Green Bay Packers in Wisconsin, Jacob Blake, he was asked if he was vaccinated, and he lied about it. He totally lied about it and was not following the protocols. Like, he'd be a poster child for why I'm totally against all of the vaccine mandates and all of that, because I don't think they're going to be enforced in a consistent manner where everybody is, what they say, playing by the same rules. But We'll have to see how time goes. Maybe I'll include a short snippet on that as well. But wow, lots and lots of workplace racism that came up in lots of different forms this week. Let's see. I'll nab one of our callers, and then I have to make sure to work through the emails because we got lots of them today. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Let's see. Getting to the phone line. Let's see. Nick Over the Road, one of our investors. I forwarded the information about work for so-called convicts, folks who used to be in greater confinement. Listener was appreciative. Nick Over the Road, you should be with us.
Oh, okay. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can I be heard? Oh, okay. Okay. Greetings, Gus, and everyone else. Gus, I wanted to run past you and Kyle's family about a service that I started a couple months ago. I call it the on-call program. There's a hotline that I give out to black people. And with this hotline, anytime they think they're coming in contact with a suspected racist, they could call this hotline and someone will always answer it. They just ask for their name, their member number, and their location, and they'll tell them to take a deep breath, relax, and don't fight, don't fuss, don't flee. Basically, it's for if they're getting pulled over. Tell them, don't fight, don't fuss, don't flee the police, and then they'll mute, the call taker will mute the phone and listen to the conversation or the interaction. If they hear anything like, get out the car, you're under arrest, what the call taker will do is call the member's emergency contacts that they register with the service. The second a dedicated PTT button, a push to talk button, and they can immediately contact whoever else is using the app. The first one, the hotline, is free. I'm paying for it out of my pocket. The second part of it, because every user on the two-way radio app costs money, they just have to pay like $17 for access a month, $17 a month. And I'm only doing this for black people. The call taker is black, the members are black, and your emergency contacts have to be black. I just think when it comes to our health and safety that we need to use just us and leave everyone else out of it due to them possibly being suspected race soldiers. The reason I came up with this service is because a lot of subtle things happen that we really don't like. For example, the guy that was, it was a guy working. He was a stonemason working in the shopping center on a restaurant wall, him and his best friend. Someone had pulled into the parking lot, passed him real fast, and he just yelled out, slow down. The guy, suspected race soldiers, got out of his truck. He called him seven niggas and shot him seven times, twice in the face. And gratefully, he lived. But it's just situations like that where we don't, you know, we could just, hey, look, they could get on a two-way radio app and say, hey, there was this plate number, description of the truck, you know, suspected race soldier, just to keep it as a record. The hotline phone call is recorded and the two-way radio information is recorded, what's being said. And that can always be available to the member. There's no personal information needed. All I really need is a name, city, county, estate, and a phone number. I'm out here over the road, and a lot of times I just go through so much out here, like when I told you guys about the human trafficking, when one of the employees at the truck stop claimed that I was doing human trafficking. And one of the things that really bothered me is that I had nobody that I knew will answer the phone every time I called in case something like this happened. The 800 number that could be used for traffic stops. I read an article where hundreds of black men came up missing out of jail. They had court dates, and I guess the court system was wondering why these people wasn't making their appearance in court. They did an investigation and found out that hundreds of black men just came up missing out of jail. I'm just trying to reduce the number of us coming up missing. And if you have any questions, you have my number, give me a call. And the only way that I could offer this service for free is if everybody volunteer. Right now, because there's not many people, I'm asking for people if they could do 4 hours a week. And this is virtually. You don't have to go to an office or anything like that. You could do it from your home to answer the phones and work the two-way radio. I just found that it's too much for me right now because I have to sleep and stuff like that. It's just a lot, and it can be totally, you know, well, not necessarily free, but it could cost very little money to do this. I've started it. I haven't really refined it or anything like that because I need our people help. And I yield the floor. Thank you for letting me speak. Well, basically, guys, this is like our own 911 system. You can look at the members as being citizens, the call takers as being the dispatcher, and the emergency contacts as being like our own police officers. Okay, I'm done. I'm done. Thank you for letting me speak.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, much obliged.
And you don't necessarily have to go. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Much obliged for. I guess being inspired, not being a spectator. That was it. Not being a spectator. We need more folks just trying to think things that they can do to solve some of our problems, to look out and see like, wow, that was believe Bobby Gale is the black male that you were talking about who was shot and called a nigger repeatedly. He did survive. This was in California just a few weeks ago. But seeing and I think Jessica Pettit, she has a whole book about that, Invisible Men. It's a riff on Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison's book, but talking about black males disappearing, not being counted. A lot of it involves going to prison, and who knows, anything can happen to you when you go there. And there's kind of a disregard for black people, especially black prisoners. So that's kind of a triple whammy. So just looking and seeing problems and trying to come up with something to solve them in terms of. Or I guess there were many facets to it in terms of if people would be willing to volunteer to kind of help work the phone lines. It'd be virtual, as you said, doing the two-way, doing the contacts. I guess if they have to do all of that 4 hours a week from their home, I guess if folks are interested, they can drop an email. If that's or if they would like more details, like, hey, I might have some free time, maybe something that I could do. I don't know. It might even qualify as community service. If you're volunteering, might have to see if you they have community service for a lot. No, we were required to do community service for one of my yoga teacher training programs. And they have other programs where you are required to do some sort of community service. So it might serve if folks need to do something to get a few hours. Drop an email if you are interested. Let's see. In terms of just the. Thoughts on the service and what I heard sounds like it could be easy and worthwhile. I would maybe suggest have some sort of maybe YouTube video or Purdue. It doesn't have to be YouTube, but just some sort of tutorial maybe on, like you said, refining. Once you kind of get to the point where you have, where you feel like you have some volunteer staff or have what you need to be able to kind of run the service, I think maybe having tutorial video on the best way to use the service so that people don't have any problems like stumbling and fumbling with the phone, like what you think the best way to utilize the safest way to utilize the service without causing any more problems is to do this, like boom, call before you even get to the point of rolling down your window or anything with the officer and that sort of thing. If the officer, you know, tries to grab your phone, like that sort of just to kind of cover what some of the potential problems could be and just kind of making sure that people have very precise, unambiguous instructions on, you know, the best way to utilize the service if they, because I mean, this is like clutch, as they say, if you've been stopped by a race soldier, like we could be talking death in the next 30 seconds, maybe sooner. So, you know, like just making sure that they have the best info possible, best way to use the service. But, yeah, those are at least the main points I can think of. Bravo for not being a spectator on trying to figure out things to help solve problems. Yes. I was going to see
this one more. I just wanted to say one more thing. What I explained, you don't have to go through me. You can do this yourself. You know, it's nothing that no one else can do. They can do it. In your area or whatever they want to do, they can do it themselves. They don't have to go through me.
Right on, right on. Might even be, it seems like, you know, if it's that easy to replicate, if you get enough people that are down to volunteer and can get it rolling, you can even set out kind of a template for how other people, if they want to, you know, take this model and use it in their area, people get set up the same thing, wherever they are in the world, where this is a problem for black people, they could set up and use the same model. Let's see. I'll check in, I guess, if folks have feedback, thoughts on the idea from Nick over the road, setting all this up. You can share as we proceed. And then I said you can drop an email if you have thoughts, would like more information. Sounds like volunteering might be of interest to you. Drop us an email. Let's see. Before I nab some of the other hands, I'll try and make sure I get through the emails that we have for today as well. I'll try and knock them down as we get through all this, get to our callers and what have you. All right, so this is from King Cobra. He writes in, hello, Gus and listeners. He's writing us from Somerville, South Carolina. I hope everyone is countering racism, white supremacy the best way they can. I have finally been placed with a trainer, suspected racist white male from Georgia, Ahmaud Arbery. He is very odd, takes a lot of medication, does not sleep, and I suspect is inflicted with the condition of sleep apnea. Woke up late night and had to go to the bathroom and saw him up gaming with one of those masks on while he was supposed to be sleeping. He constantly picks his nose and does not have healthy eating habits or good hygiene. We were on the way to Paris, California from Springfield, Missouri, and I have 30,000 miles to complete with him. See what I talked about? Being in those confined spaces for a long period of time? I do not feel like this is safe at all, but I feel like if I say something, it will be one more thing they will use against me, but am prepared to do so. This is absolutely insane. I do not want to, but I honestly might just wait it out. But if things get worse, then the worse, I will have to say something. I have planned to take home time around Thanksgiving, and I might just get a local job. They do pay as much as Prime Inc., but that does not really matter. They are paying me $589 to $700 weekly to go through this, and I can make that door dashing. Does anyone know any companies that hire truckers out of school? But Thanksgiving time, I should have several thousand miles. Thank you always, Gus and listeners. I know they were saying drivers are in demand, but there are details to that in terms of, like he was saying, like, how do you have to have experience? How much experience? Do they hire drivers right out of school? Because I did see reports that is part of what they are calling the bottleneck in terms of certain supplies not being at the store or being more expensive or taking longer to get there. That's one part of the problem, not having enough drivers for a variety of different industries. But that is often a catch. It's not just we're hiring anybody who's a driver. You got to be a driver with 5 years experience or, you know, some other things on resumes. That may be changing if things are, you know, really a big problem. Might be something to check in. I guess if folks have any information about that, let us share or share with us. And with regards to the first portion, this person, I don't really know about the poor eating habits and sleep apnea. It seems like, I don't know, like, do you have to sleep near the person? I guess with driving, like, I would be hoping that we're in our own room or, you know, something where whatever their sleep problems are, that's on them. They want to eat McDonald's all day, that's on them. You know, they can have obesity and diabetes and whatever, and right on. Eat whatever you're going to eat. I have my own food. In terms of the nose picking and hygiene, I probably wouldn't feel bad about it. Or I guess I would try to couch it in terms of the current health pandemic. I probably wouldn't even have to get into details. I'm just saying that this person engages in behaviors that are unsafe, that would jeopardize my safety in the middle of this health pandemic, and try to be vague about it because you don't want to. And if they ask for details, you can just say, oh, yeah, the person is picking their nose and wiping it on the steering wheel and in the compartment of the vehicle. This is totally unsafe. I mean, this is way beyond a mask and all the rest of it. Hygiene. He's not washing his hands or not washing up, and just go. I mean, whatever it is, dates, times, that this is a regular thing. I don't know if he's got some sort of congestion or sinus problem, but I mean, hey, they've been saying for almost 2 years, no touching your face. Haven't y'all heard that? I know I've heard that from Dr. Fauci, all kinds of folks. No touching your face, hands away from your face, certainly digging in your nose and all that, and touching over a compartment where everybody's got to share. We're in close quarters again because we're having a drive. I would just approach it from we're in the middle of a health pandemic still for a reason. Even if he's vaccinated, you can still transmit the virus. So that's the way that I would approach it. I wouldn't even think about it as, you know, I'm snitching on somebody for, you know, whatever little gross habits that they have. And, you know, you can ignore, like, nope, this would just be brought up in the rubric of health and that word again, health and safety in the midst of a global health crisis. That's the way that I would bring it up, and, you know, see what they now. It might be one of those environments that COVID schmovid, you know, I don't care about all that. I high five everybody and, you know, pick my nose and high five everybody. I mean, maybe, but at least we're supposed to be pretending that we're engaging in safe practices right now. So that's the angle that I would bring that one up. If it continues to be a war. Yeah, that's just the angle that I'd bring it up. I wouldn't have to wait on anything. Just we're in the middle of COVID. We should all be doing more to be clean and looking out for each other's health and well-being. Yes, you can put that in the form of a question. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments, your own situation, thoughts on the program that Nick Over the Road mentioned, your own situations or what have you, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I was just listening to the beginning reports, and especially that last one. And Guthrie, Oklahoma, is only about maybe 10, 15 minutes away from the college, the undergrad college that I attended, Langston University, and the all-black small town of Langston. Also, I was just thinking about that when I heard the report on the horrendous death of that black male and the loss that his family is suffering from it. Very close.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Yep, right. I have not been to Oklahoma, but the site that I went to, the news site, I was going there regularly in the midst of the Daniel Holtzclaw trial, so it was immediately familiar, that part of the world. But I mean, again, that's just lacking the vocabulary. Heinous, grisly. Illustration of workplace, exactly what we're talking about. Thankfully, it's just not, you know, that gruesome of an example in most of the instances that we're talking about. But I mean, it's just gradations of, you know, white supremacy, racism. But if anything, that is a very serious illustration about, hey, we talk about workplace safety. We talk about people being threatened because we've had a number of folks all over the world who participated in neutralizing workplace racism, who have discussed being threatened, being assaulted in the workplace, even by other black people, even by other non-white people. All of that, take it seriously. That's why I said, like, hey, call the police. Like, somebody assaults you in the workplace, make a police report. The job, they can have their own procedure about things as well, but make a police report. Take all of that seriously. People that are being threatening in the workplace, people that are brandishing a firearm or talking about firearms and violence in the workplace, take all of that very seriously. Like I said, I don't know all of the details about what led up to the murder of Mr. Brent Mack. But man, like I said, for the reports, just a little bit to hear that, oh, man, it seemed like there were problems, disagreements in the workplace. Mr. Mack saying, hey, I don't think this white man, his boss, is doing Daniel Triplett. I don't think he's doing correct things. Perhaps it was Mr. Mack was being mistreated, where he's got to go and document that these things are happening. And then you got a witness saying that he saw them in some sort of argument. Like, man, take all of that serious. If you're in a work environment where it seems like there's like a vendetta, a white person really has it out for you, and you have to go in and you all are having spats on a regular basis and you're having to document all kinds of mistreatment, take it seriously. White people are super dangerous, especially if anything even sounds like a threat or violence or anything of that nature. Safety. Report it to as many people as you can, if that's the police, all of the above. Yeah, I mean, just like I said, I didn't even think of that case as workplace racism when I first heard it. I was just, you know, aghast, but it absolutely is workplace racism. That is the epitome of workplace racism right there. End up being killed, not just by a white coworker, your white boss, and dumped under a septic tank.
Mm. Speaking of workplace racism in Oklahoma, I was just there for homecoming, quote unquote, about 3 weeks ago, going on now, about three weeks ago. And I stayed in Oklahoma City, which is the major city in the state of Oklahoma. And I would drive from Oklahoma City to Langston, which is about 50 miles. But anyway, staying in the hotel, you know, I was just looking out the window, looking in around, because I was the downtown area, which is, you know, not a New York or a not even a South Florida. But nevertheless, they do have what they would identify as tall buildings. And they were in construction of one, just, I would say, maybe 100 meters away from me. You know, you're looking out of a big picture window up onto something like the 10th floor or something like that. You're looking right across at this building, and you see all of these workers, and you have to imagine that if they're going up on these, the word is not trolleys, on outside of the buildings, and they're going up 20, 30 stories high, that these are highly skilled and specialized jobs. I didn't notice not a non-white black person at all doing that type of work at all. You know, so it's, I mean, which is not surprising, but nevertheless, I would say that there is a shortage of black people that have jobs like that. I didn't even have to go that far. I can, in South Florida, riding around in South Florida, and you look at the construction sites, like rebuilding of expressways, that type of thing. And a lot of these jobs are skilled jobs, which means that they require, you know, good training, and you're going to have a very, very decent salary. You don't see any black people at all on these jobs at all. Being it is so consistent, one has to factor in that racism is being practiced. And this is why you don't have black people on these jobs, on these type of jobs, similar to the one that I retired from. You know, similar to the one I retired from, the reasoning on why you don't see that many people on jobs like that is because the job resists to hire non-white people, to train non-white people, you know, that sort of thing. And that was a clear observation. Oh, and also nobody wear a mask in Oklahoma. Nobody wear a mask in Oklahoma at all. And that's my observations. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. I am not surprised in the least about the masks. It just depends on where you are. Now, we'll say for construction sites that are outside, a number of places have pretty lax rules about being outside. But even be that as it may, I'm not surprised. That's, you know, starting to move closer to what they call the Black Belt area and getting down to, oh, yeah, forget all that. I think they said it's at least 9 states bringing lawsuits like, we're not on vaccine mandate. You're not going to make me wear a mask. Nah, doing all that. As for the greater point in terms of the lack of black construction workers in Oklahoma and abroad, because, I mean, this is a widespread problem occurrence. Not coincidence, not accidents, just like you said with the fire department and Silicon Valley and many of these other industries that are lucrative. And I'd say with what you're talking about specifically, like construction work and that sort of thing, carpentry, all of that, those are the types of jobs that we were talking about maybe 2 weeks ago, sometime like in October. We were talking about the occupational handbook. Those are the type of jobs you don't need to go University of Miami. Spend $100,000, $250,000. You don't need to go to Florida University, University of Florida, Florida State, or even an HBCU in Oklahoma. You don't need to do that. Right. That was the type of thing you can go get training, you know, even some OJT sometimes, as they call it. But you can go get training for those jobs and get those skills and be out working immediately and making a pretty good salary, as retired firefighter said, while the person who's at that 4-year university is still, you know, years before they're out, much less before they are hired and earning off of that degree, if that even happens. So, yeah, that's not an accident. That is by design. And it's been that way in lots of industries where white people deliberately find lots of ways of not advertising those jobs. They just hot lot nepotism, my goodness, where they bring in their nephews and cousins and sons and all the rest of it, and friends, homies that they went to school with, and just spread the little jobs around there. Or if it's a local thing, just the people that I went to kindergarten with and my little clique on this side of town, we hook each other up with jobs and that sort of thing. Like, woo, tons of that all the way through in the system of racism, white supremacy. And then they come up with lots of lame excuses where black people don't want to do these jobs, or we can't find any black people that are qualified, and they can't fill out the resume, they don't show up on time, they can't pull their pants up on their behind, they're smoking ganja, and all that. Just excuse after excuse after excuse, when it's no, you all are practicing white supremacy racism. Period. Even Mr. Fuller talked about that. Like, you talk about those construction companies, like, ooh wee, you are talking about gangsters, like mafia, and they want to call it organized crime or whatever. But there is a lot of white muscle, white racism, and making sure that white people have all those types of jobs and even legacy, pass them on to their offspring and what have you, those jobs and construction companies and that sort of thing. Let's see. Other folks who, if you have thoughts on what's been shared thus far, thoughts on the vaccine mandate, is that going to impact, you know, your job choices in terms of do you have to be vaccinated or not, all of that, let us know. Number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The email untiljustice@gmail.com. Let's see, get some more of the emails included as well. All right, so this is King Cobra again. So we got an update. Hopefully things did not get worse. Let's see. Okay. Workplace racism continue. Black self-respect. So he was talking about his, or I was going to say supervisor, but I guess white training partner, co-worker, I guess we'll call him. So he says, I also suspect he is in a tragic arrangement with a non-white female. Cowbell. I got a small glimpse of a picture on his screensaver, but it very much could have just been a random woman he finds sexually attractive. Could be true. Whenever his suspected sexual partner calls, his phone ringtone is T.I. You can have whatever you like. ATL. He is just plain out weird and looks weird also. Has a belt plate, is always pulling up his pants, and buttocks is exposed. I just talked about that. I said they use that as excuse to not hire black people, not white people. No, lost my point. I also have caught him looking at half-naked non-white, non-black females when I stepped into the back of the truck to prepare my shower supplies. I acted like I did not see him, and he started acting suspicious. Now, all I can say again, man, for Jeffrey Toobin, many others, no looking at pornographic material while you are in your work environment. So if you drive, no looking at pornography while you are in the vehicle, even if it's your own vehicle. If you're doing DoorDash or whatever it is, delivery driving, whatever. No looking at pornographic material while you are in a work capacity in any way, shape, form. You have no idea somebody else is watching. You have, even for DoorDash and those types of things, they're talking about having all kinds of surveillance in the vehicle so they can see what's happening or hear what's happening and all the rest of it. Like, none of that. And also, you have no idea if they have any sort of surveillance. Are they looking to see what websites you're on and all the rest of it? I know someone was doing the test driving. For I think it might have been Google. They were doing the self-driving cars and they had someone in the vehicle and they were supposed to be paying attention in case something went wrong. Something did go wrong, but they weren't paying attention. They went back and looked at the records to see what she was doing, and they just pulled up everything that was on her phone. It's like, oh, she was watching Netflix at the time of the crash. That's why you weren't paying attention. So they can go back and look at your records. And I believe that was her phone that they looked at. This wasn't like the company phone or what have you, unless I misread the report. So no looking at pornographic material. John Gruden just got in trouble for that. Like, no half-naked pics and all the rest. Like, save that for when you are off the clock. Even if you work with other black people, even if it's your homie. I work with my family members or, you know, somebody I went to kindergarten with. Like, this is not the time to engage in that conduct. Do this on your free time. He continues. This is the email I just sent to my fleet manager. I don't want to cause any problems or suffer any backlash. My trainer is not the most hygienic and constantly picks his nose and wipes it on everything. I have swollen lymph nodes in my face and neck that I did not have prior to getting on the truck with him. I want off the truck and I do not want to discuss this any further. This is the biggest deal breaker I've discussed with you and him before I got on this truck, and I'm not blaming you. I would like to be sent home to tend to my health issues while I wait for a new trainer. If we could get a load back to Charleston or Walterboro, South Carolina, that would be fine also. I would like to keep this as discreet as possible because I do not want any backlash of any kind. I have heard stories about trainers dropping people off on the highway. He is a nice guy, but I just put health and safety above all. Safety. I would have just thrown in the pandemic just to remind folks. Like I said, I know, you know, Aaron Rodgers and some folks, you know, have their own thoughts about all this. But all of that notwithstanding, we are still in the middle of a global health pandemic. We should be going above and beyond to prioritize that word that he ended with. Safety. Health. And safety. But again, like I said, I totally understand the defensiveness, and you are not trying to call anybody out, which I got here. I totally think that's appropriate in saying I'm trying to be discreet about all this. But I'm just, hey, we're in the middle, you know, of a health pandemic, and I just don't want to take any unnecessary health risks. He's a swell guy, which he said in the letter, swell guy and everything. But I just, you know, my safety is a number one priority, and I just don't want to take any chances. Who's going to be upset about that? And if so, why? In the middle of a health pandemic. You didn't go put this out on the bulletin board trying to shame the guy or anything like that. Hey, I just, can I get a different trainer? But help me concentrate where I don't have to worry about, am I, you know, putting my health at risk for this training? I don't even know how long this lasts, because it's like a month long thing, a 2 month long thing. Like, I have no idea. Like, you could be hanging out with him for a long time. So, yeah, I think you did the correct thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with the letter. I would have just mentioned the pandemic. That's it. Other than that, A plus. We'll see, you know, how they respond and all that. But I don't think in any way, shape, form, I don't think you should feel defensive or health safety is best priority that you can think of, that I can think of, worth more than anything. If you have $1 billion right now and lose your health, all that money, you might not even be well enough to spend it. So prioritize your health. Bravo, sir. That was King Cobra. Email again is untiljustice@gmail.com. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. So if you have any folks, if you have thoughts on how you would handle that situation, thoughts on how King Cobra dealt with all that, or if you've had to deal with that before, how you would deal with it, let us know. Thoughts on I guess any of the news reports that were the vaccine, like I said, that mandate for January 4. Folks have any thoughts about the vaccine and how that's impacting your work experience? Or Nick over the road, his thoughts about establishing like a separate emergency call system. Thoughts on any of that or your own situation? Feel free. Let's see. Bay Area Mom should be with us as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Thank you. Greetings to you and everyone on the line. Okay, first thing. Okay, mandate. Yes. So by the, I think the first dose is supposed to, you supposedly already have, should have had it for the company that I work for, I believe. And if you're going to get the single dose, one, I think you have until next week, I think the 18th or something like that, of November, one of those teen dates. And, or whatever your gimmick is, maybe a religious, exempt or however you can, do it, or, the, consistent testing. And then I have another, job that I applied to do, and their program is the parent, since I'm only going to do one home, they can sign a waiver stating that they don't mind, you know, whomever's vaccinated or not. So that's for that assignment with me whenever I get on it. So yes, it is it is major. And I think even in the schools too, they're trying to make it to where the you're 5 and up to get the vaccination. I think the 5 through 11 or 5 through something like that, they might get a half of a particular portion of it. That's not as much as maybe the preteen and teenagers would get. So, yeah, it's totally affecting California. Of course, we have, like, because I could disconnect it to one of the clips that you played about the striking. I guess it's Striketober. I missed it. But they were striking out here, the nurses. And it's, I think, maybe 30,000. So lots of thousands of nurses are going to do it again next week. So, it's interesting, and I don't know, I just try to stay out the way. Yeah, even with the colleges and just everything, even going inside of certain eateries, like you want to go to Denny's, oh, sure, yeah, you can come in, but you can't sit out unless you got the car, you know, so just that kind of thing. Not like I want to sit down. Oh yeah, and out here they changed it. In my county, they changed it to where that you have to. They're not even doing the dine-in in a lot of the restaurants. Because there was a issue about one of the burger joints not forcing the patrons to show proof of vaccination. So they just had stated that they were just going to say, forget it, and make for the county that I'm in to not, no dine-in, just forget it. And I guess that would be convenient, too, now because it's cold, flu, hay fever season, so then they'll have everybody, woo! Anyway, so that worked out. But, okay, one more. The guy with the truck driver, it sounds like a truck driver. Whomever the driver is that has this gross guy training him. Oh, that's got to be awful. Poor thing. I don't know how I would look like. He would have already stopped because I would have looked offended. Just everything. And not the way I clown. Yeah. Something would have happened without me even saying anything to him because the way my OCD is set up, I wouldn't be able to breathe. Oh, dear, poor thing. So, and the digging in your nose, it would just make me think, you know, typical behavior because they're so gross, you know, sometimes, I mean, and, ugh. I don't know if you can see. Here's the deal. If you want, you could do local, like you said. But if the getting the extra hours would be beneficial to you, especially economically, or that was your original goal, I might stick it out for a couple of hundred hours. I don't know. Cause I think you need the hours. So that's. I know. I'm sorry. Right, but. Get you some Santa, I don't know. And he got sleep apnea, I bet. Nasty, but, man, I bet he got sleep apnea. Ugh, be glad he's not a chick that got to date him or one of those little ladies they pick up at the stop. You lucky. So, anyway, I just think if you can hang in, I don't know, do what you want, but think of consider maybe hanging. If you need the hours versus just being local, I don't know. You could do it. So, there was another guy. the one with the hotline idea. That was nice. That was nice. I could do something. I don't know what, but you know, I could participate or whatever. Help. I got a couple of hours. Even though I'm California time, I'll try to help somebody from getting whatever they do to victims. I'm like, sure. I know a couple of, I got my code book next to the, you know, next to me, like a, you know, a telephone. So I could assist, maybe. So, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I'm not going to send an email. You can ask. I don't know how you can feel it, but I'm probably not going to send it. I might. I'll think about it. But I'm just letting you know I'm willing to assist. But if you don't need my help and you need me to start one out here, I'm not. So I don't need help on starting the Negro 911. So, no. But if you need assistance on whatever you're trying to do, then I'm available. Or I'll make myself available. I'll do something to assist because that was warm. That was a warm thought. So, workers' racism. Okay, so I'm trying to wind down. I'm trying to pull back. I see myself maybe March being all done with the kids. I decided to keep the little boy, but it's just going to be on a different realm and it won't be every day. With the little girl, she's so sweet. She got her, I guess it was a report card or something. So, grandma, look at this. So I'm reading it. So I don't know how people think you read, but I don't know what she thought I was going to do. So I'm reading it. So I have to read it. So I need to just zip it up so I can focus on these numbers and whatever it says, the letters. So she's talking. What do you think? I'm just pretty good. I'm just, hold on, please. I don't know yet. I don't know if it's pretty good. I don't know because I'm trying to read it. Complicated. There's talking. So I'm getting confused. It's my friend. I should be quiet for a little bit. So I took longer than I guess she did because I was really studying the marks. So it would be great if they would work with her. Not they. It would be great if mom would work with her at home, because she could really meet some of her goals for school. I was just looking at it, and, you know, it's never a... No, she did pretty good for this, or she did this for this, or she could... You can never... You can't... For one, you can't talk, especially my lips. Unless I'm asked. So now I don't even say nothing unless I'm so quiet. She'll just keep talking 150,000 words, and then it'll be like, so... Well, do you think so? If I'm just looking, and since all you can see is my eye, my eyebrow, you don't know what I'm, you don't know, right? So, I'm, you know, still studying this report card. So I was just telling her, this is really, so they're focused on just immediately. I don't know what mom did, what said, I wrote to her mom, but just with grandma, with me, immediately she's in defense of what she doesn't know. And whatever, however that is, I guess that's my fault. She don't know. And then even with, so I try to assist, like, one thing is tracing her name. So she can't trace her name. She's, oh, wait, okay, just for entertainment. This is what she does at school. So. All the kids, okay, Susan, trace your name. They get to say what your name. Okay. And then it's her. She get her paper. So she's doing a TikTok video stolen from somebody. And the TikTok decided to take it over. So it's some circle game. So it's circle. One circle, one big circle. www.nipple, nipple, 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 e. So this is what happens when pencil or pen go to her hand with paper, period. Okay, where's she at? That's exactly what she's doing. Because mom, such a genius, showed her how to do that. And she's sitting there doing that foolishness. She's been doing this for months. And it was cute, I guess, maybe months ago in the summer, maybe April, Easter break or something. I don't know. But when she's doing it at school, it's ridiculous. It's not cute. It's embarrassing. It's dumb. So, but she's cute. There's a button, right? She has a little, always a little out colors. She's so cute. She even tells, you know, because people, cause she's shorter, she's smaller, because she's, you know, so they'll tell her, so cute. So now she's, you know, barely talking, but she's so cute, you know, so cute. Wonderful, right? And she's a cute girl. But this is what's going on in school. So I said, oh, this is your mama's fault that you're doing this. So I told her, to grandma, I said, look, so anything with words and instructions, I don't understand what y'all doing. When you guys let her just scribble, and do all that stuff, and then you can't even get a word in because you get cut off. It's defense time. So I just listened and I said, look. So, like I said, print out the paper, whatever the paper is that she You go to school. Apparently, this is y'all homework, but I'm not tripping. Print it out. I'll do you one. Give me one. I feel like if I have time, I'll have her do a couple of lines. Now, because that's not one of my goals, I'm not forcing her to do anything. I'll just take some time if she's writing or if I feel like it, and I'll have her go over it. So I did it today. I did it a few times. I did it today. So I said, okay, so Grandma, this is what I'm doing. Da, 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 da. So she's like, oh, she did? She didn't do that by herself, right? I said, look, lady, you know she didn't do it by herself. All I'm saying is, I'm trying, and then you get caught up. Oh, okay. Never mind. So now, who knows? She doesn't know anything because you can't get a word in because everybody's always in defense of or trying to prove how they do this already. We already do. Been doing that. She just this and this and at school this. And so it just shows that she does need an aid. She will fall behind. Cutin' behind. And it's just a whole buckets of excuses. And it's just tacky. So, oh, and the little boy. So I was able to get the little boy's mom to do something because she had asked me how he was doing. And I just told her he's great, but he's jumping off stairs. He's jumping off out the pantry. He's doing stunts off the pantry. So he'll climb all the way to the top of the pantry and just woo to land in your arms. And she's looking at it like it's attention. That's fine. He gets attention. It's not that attention. I'm looking at it as these are stunts from these all the stuff that he has. He's watching. So she's lifting, and I said, this is a good idea. Oh, so the uncle is moving out in 3 weeks. So when I thought that they were building the bed, and I was singing the big boy bed song and a year ago, and he's getting a new bed because he's jumping off the baby bed. You get on top of that baby bed crib and just jump. Whoa! So they're acting like this is a new thing, but when I walked in the door, this is what he's doing. This is not new. He's just enhancing it because his brain is developing, so he's really into trying to perfect the stunt. And if you love me, you should be here to have my back. If I shouldn't break nothing because y'all should, woo, you don't see me? Come on, catch me because I got to work on this stunt. So that's the thing. So I'm trying to explain to her. And I just told her, if you can minimize some of his clutter, he has a lot. He has toys from birth. Minimize some of his clutter. Give him maybe 5 things at the most of the 5 different things, and that's it. Rotate some of the things. You don't have to buy him everything because he breaks everything. Breaks everything. So I just, as an example, I have some drumsticks, electronic drumsticks, because I'm just boosty like that. So I got electric drumsticks. So I was like, here, Mom, let me show you. See these? And they made noise. wonderful noise. So I said, give him some of these or something like that. So I said, so she's like, oh, look. And so she liked it. He loved them. So he's when I take him, the mom looked like, you're not going to leave him? No. No two-parent home, over $100,000 income together with all these people in the house. Yes, taking my drumsticks, okay? But you're welcome to Google something like this, okay? That's what you should do, okay? Good job. Good job today. Well, that's how my day went. Yeah, okay. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll mute my line.
That is a full Friday, Bay Area mom. My goodness. Go through all that, and she is a parent herself. Yikes. I guess a suggestion, because you have mentioned this like a number of times, where you go in and you're working with clients and they get defensive and you're trying to share information, at least from what it sounds like, not being judgmental, not being critical. You're there as an aide trying to give resources to the child, just giving out some recommendations, and they and cut you off and all the rest of it. If this is a workplace situation and I see this happening a lot, I probably would bring that up, because I bring that up on the program. People interact. I say that on the program, like, it is so challenging. You're trying to talk and share information. People are interrupting you and things. Like, I would just bring that up. Like, it's really important. I would emphasize, even before you get to that, I'm not here to criticize. I'm not here to judge. I'm just offering suggestions. You are a parent. You're in control. I'm just here. If you think the suggestions would be helpful, implement. If you don't want to, hey. or however, you know, you say it to them. But I mean, if like this is not, do not think of me as someone here to judge you or cast aspersions on your parenting or anything. If that's not what this is, just often suggest trying to help. That's all. If you don't, you know, the suggestions, you don't think they'll be beneficial, psh, keep on. That said, it's very important in this arrangement, relationship, that I'm able to speak. You can certainly give me all kinds of feedback. Certainly, I welcome feedback. If you have questions, if something doesn't make sense, or if you just flat out, like, you know, what you just said is totally incorrect, it's totally wrong, and we're not doing it, all of that's fine. But just, it is important, at least let me articulate my thoughts. It can be, you know, bullet point. I think sometimes the people that do a lot of interrupting, where I know that's the type of environment that I have, I will shorten what I say so that I can be as precise as possible in getting to the points. And then, bam, they have their feedback time. Like, and let them know that too. Like, you always have feedback, always ask questions, but it's very important that I be allowed to speak, just to share. These are my observations as a trained specialist here to help your child. These are my observations and or recommendations. Feel free to implement or disregard. Always feel free to ask questions. You should always, always ask questions, like, you know, all that. But yeah, because that's just like we're wasting time. Like, I'm trying to come in and share, like, I've worked with your child repeatedly, apparently, and all this, and trying to come in and give you my expert, you know, recommendations, and I can't even get started. Like, you know. Yeah, I would bring that up. Let's see. With the vaccine, I think that was In-N-Out Burger in San Francisco, that they were not, I guess, complying. They're supposed to have their employees check the vaccination status if patrons come in, if they're going to sit in the diner. And they got, you know, white defiance, got real indignant about it. All like, we're not going out here and acting as the police. This is not a police state. We're not going to do it. And all this stuff. So they shut them down. I guess they've reopened. That specific location in San Francisco has reopened. I'm not sure if they have indoor dining. They might just be relegated to outdoor dining. But yeah, that's In-N-Out. The Mac vaccine mandates. Like, whew. That is going to be a lot. That's grand that they have that option. I know you were saying that one of the other clients, where you just have one, I guess, family or one house that you visit, where the client, they can sign a waiver and say, I don't, you know, it's fine if the person is not vaccinated. Like, that's great, where you at least have more options, more choices. Although it seems like that is waning for a number of individuals. Bravo on the exit strategy. I heard that as well, saying she thinks she'll be moving on at least by March. So bravo. Yeah, just stick to it, dedicated, because, yeah, for so many reasons, like, you can be looking for other things to do with your career, time, and energy. Sounded like we might have even had one volunteer prospect for Nick Over the Road. I already have her email, so she's there. Yeah, I can forward along or just, yeah, let me know what the procedure is. But she says she might be have a few hours to spare to man the phone lines. Bravo for not spectating. Let's see, I can get in my quick plug, as well. This is her work environment, where she's working with children and seeing the impact, of all this screen time, whatever they picked up from, TikTok. And then she's told us for a number of weeks now, this, I guess this young black boy, where he's been watching, Rio or whatever, the different cartoons and such, and acting all that out, jumping off the staircase and jumping off the bed and unsafe activity. I'd said it before, like, in my view, we're serious about being attempted counter-racist parents. No television in the house. That is such a powerful weapon. I think lots of us don't see television as a white supremacy weapon because we grew up with television. Like, you got, you know, at least 2-3 generations of children, like, oh yeah, watch television all day long. Like, whoo, best thing ever. And I mean, hey, like, the TV that you grew up with now, like, my gosh, like, it's limitless everything. Like, my goodness. But, like, none of that, I don't think any of that is constructive, especially for young children. Like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah, that should be Lots of interactive time with engaged adults and engaged children and activities and fun stuff and all that, not staring at some screen at God knows what. Oh, you do know what it is. White supremacy racism. That's what it is. You do know what it is. Precious, all the rest of it, whatever Disney concoction is the latest thing released. But no screen time. I mean, it's the same thing. They shouldn't have their own tablet or phone or what have you, like down the road and once they're in school and all that. Great, and be really engaged about the usage of these products. But I mean, yeah, no TV in the house if you are going to have children. I think that should just be, yeah, we're not going to have a child that just sits around and amuses themselves for an hour a day or 2 hours a day or 30 minutes a day watching television. Anywho, safety, like, yeah, throw away children, like, man, see that every time working with different clients, like, that would be demoralizing, too, like, man, like, we are children having throwaway children, really, like, whew, that would be kind of demoralizing if that was my work environment on a regular basis. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Let's see, the number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Hello.
Greetings, our caller in Georgia. That's where the trainer was from. Caller was talking about all those hygiene issues. Said his trainer was in Georgia, too. Yes, ma'am. Good to hear from you.
Well, good evening. Hopefully everyone's having the best evening they have, and thank you for taking my call. About that person with the hygiene issues, I guess this, haven't been able to keep up. I don't know if this is the first letter regarding that. But I would have to say something to the person, and I would probably tell them, if you can't, then I need to move on, because this is your life. You know, you're no good to anyone sick. Even with the management, I would like, you know, if I'm sick, I can't do what you've hired me to do, you know, productivity, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. I would bring up those things. Because, again, if you're not at work, you're not benefiting the employer. And if you're an employee, that's what they want to see. What things are you doing to benefit the employer? And this is, you know, if you're becoming ill and, you know, like you said, there's a pandemic, you know, we have to do our best to be safe, close quarters, all those type of things. But I definitely would have had to say something to the person, again, because we're in close quarters. And, you know, I know in general, people aren't really taught to speak up generally if something like that, there's a problem. But you can't be afraid. I remember personally one time I was around Black people and we had an eating event, and I was a teenager, and someone, the driver, as they were one of the drivers for this event, had a drink. And so it was time to go home. And I was like, this person is not driving me home. And I was like, I was very adamant about that. And there was someone else who didn't drink, and they were able to bring me back to the place I was staying. I was in a program. So I was staying outside, not only just outside my neighborhood, but outside of the state. So you have to be bold about your life, because your life is not worth that job. I don't, you know. I guess unless you decide to be in the military, you know, where your life may be lost, you know, you kind of indirectly sign up for that. The 911 suggested by Nick, I do think that that's a good idea. I guess some of the things I thought about, I know he said it was only for Black people, but, you know, is this for when they're in the car by themselves? you know, what if something happens? And, you know, there are a lot of people who have, you know, are in tragic arrangements. If that person calls on behalf of the person, you'll be like, oh, no, I can't talk to you because you're white, you know, and things like that. So I guess those kind of details, then recording phone calls, and, you know, certain states allow recording phone calls, some don't, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. So, and the bone, well, I guess the structure, the idea, the concept to me, it does sound very good. And, you know, how are you going to pass this around? Because if you tell, you know, are you going to tell the black person who's in a tragic arrangement, are you going to give them this number, and then knowing that if they are, they may share that information with the non-black person who may be white or whatever. So those are kind of things you need to think about. And then the training. And I know this will grow over time. You can't think about all this today. I understand it's a big undertaking. But, you know, the people that volunteer, I'm thankful I have my parents to call in the event something happens. You know, they can talk to me and things like that, and I can have them listen on the phone. I probably do that either way, whether it's legal or not, because, again, it's my life. I just have to, you know, be arrested or something. I don't know. That's my life. I don't have to do that. And then, you know, will there be a script? Okay, follow these steps, do this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And you have to have training. Because it's when it's people in that situation, you're definitely someone who's stable and calm and who has a plan. I just know from working with customer service, again, I definitely don't do that. I work with taxes. People get very, you know, with tax time, people get nervous and things. Oh, the IRS is going to get me. You're going to put in jail, blah, blah, blah. You know, people who have heightened frenzy or anxiety, you have to really make sure, you know, if you're going to volunteer, you know, you have the time, the resources, your phone isn't janky, you know, this, that, and the other, and that you have the temperament to do that, because that would be, that's a lot of stress. That would be almost like the trauma every day from this person being shot and they showing the video, this person being shot, showing the video, to be able to deal with that and have resources for them. So, again, if you need help kind of with the framework, whatever, so those are the kind of things I think about. I'd be glad to help with that, because you really do have to think about those things as you grow and develop. But, and the thought of it, it is really an excellent idea. I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing, but it is an excellent idea. That's kind of how I think when I hear somebody has an idea. I just kind of think of, okay, what if this happens? What do they do for this, that, and other? I'm not being trying to be critical. That's just how I think and try to help people solve their problems. Thank you.
Much obliged, caller in Georgia. Great points, I thought, for Nick over the road, especially, yeah, you do have tragic arrangements. And even if this is for exclusively black people, if it's a black person and they, you know, are in some sort of arrangement where their emergency contact is a non-black, non-white person, like, is that supposed to happen? What do we do then? Like, yeah, all that's... details are important. Think about all of that. Yeah, to kind of help flush out ideas. That's, you know, important, I think. As for the hygiene, that's what I thought, you know, like safety is like numero uno, like safety above all, like bravo. The personal anecdote where you were out. It seems like we've heard that type of thing before. From a black person who was at work, they went to like happy hour, or had, we used to do, we would have staff meetings. So I worked the school system in California. We'd have staff meetings, and instead of just having them at the school, once the children are gone and you know kick back, do whatever you got to do and get out of there. Oh no. We would go literally down the hill from the school, and there was a restaurant bar. We would go down there and let's do it up. Ooh, tequila and all the rest of it. And that's where we would do the staff meeting. Like, man, I was ignorant. Nothing about counter-racism, none of that. I only ceased this behavior,
consumption of alcohol because I was running. I was running all the time as opposed to yoga. I was just run every day. And you can't really run and do alcohol. It dehydrates you, like, especially if you're doing like running miles, 5 miles or anything more like that, like no alcohol. So I was just like, yeah, I can't drink anymore. You know, I love tequila like anybody else, but, or I guess everybody doesn't love tequila, but whatever. Nothing is better than water. And my excuse to them was, hey, I got to run today. Can't drink with you guys. Having one extra shot for me. Like, what? What do you mean, Gus? Come on. You chopper, let's get the Patron. I was like, no, I'm good. It's great and all. Thank you kindly, but I'm going to run today. And it just really makes me feel health. What is more important than health? And it was like so unpleasant that I really didn't even want to go anymore. I'd be like, let's, you know, if you all are going to go do that, whoopee, let's do the business stuff at school and I will catch you all later. Like, because just to be hounded and harassed, but yeah, to have the courage, like, no, and whoa, I am not getting in that vehicle. You have been dropped. Man, workplace racism. Henry Ruggs III. Under the influence, they said his car was clocked at 156 miles per hour. Not a typo. 156 miles per hour at the time of, or I guess a few seconds before the crash. Killed the person. And got fired, of course. Sobriety would be best. But yeah, I'm not getting in the vehicle. Like, I say that at the end of every program. My goodness. Like, if you're going to be in a vehicle, like, woo, I'm not getting in this car. I don't want to be involved in any part. And that even can have workplace ramifications. You all are out and about. You get in that vehicle. You get in an accident. You get stopped by the police. Anything like that. Some people, where they work, you might have a security clearance. That sort of incident, you getting stopped by the police, and you're under the influence, or there's an accident and you're under the influence, like, oh my God, like that sort of thing, you might have to report to the people that you, the white people that you likely work for. Like, it's a whole lot of the same thing. She was, sometimes it's a whole lot to consider. So yeah, if you work in one of those environments, and man, that is right on time. We are in the middle of the no good season, holidays. I suspect now that things are somewhat, you know, back together, right? I suspect there will probably be a hue and cry to resume those office holiday parties or whatever the traditions are. If it's, we got to go out and celebrate at a bar or restaurant or all of the above, man, avoid like the plague. And I would make it plain. Hey, I'm still cautious about large gatherings. I would phrase it just that way. We're still in the middle of a national health pandemic. I'm still cautiously avoiding large gatherings. Doesn't matter about the vaccination status, mask, none of that. I am still cautiously avoiding large gatherings. And I don't have children, but if I did, I would include that. As a parent, I'm cautiously avoiding large gatherings. Now, if it's the sort of thing where they do it in the workplace, because I've been in that environment too, where I had both, where they do it off hours at somebody's house or a restaurant or whatever, and I've had it where they just, that becomes a part of your paid workday, is to fraternize and do this goofiness. So I've had it both ways. And sometimes that includes having alcohol when you do it in the workplace. I'm not drink. Fine. I'm here. Right on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks taking. Got it. Right. Right. Saving clause. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Get back to work. No, thank you. I'm good. I got my water. Thank you kindly. I'm good. Nope, I don't need anything to eat. No, thank you. I'm good. And that would be the same that I'm still cautiously avoiding. I brought my own meal. Thank you kindly. But yeah, bravo for not getting in the vehicle. Sobriety would be best, and not riding with folks who are anything other than sober. Especially, like I said, especially in a work context. Like, my God, that is... You do not even want to have to think about that. Like, oh, how am I going to explain this to my supervisor? Well, we were at the club, and after 15, she's like, oh. Anywho, We did get an update. Let's see. Because she was talking, all that was in the rubric of, hey, speak up, safety first. Got to say something. This is an unsafe environment. I think we did get an update on what happened with all this. Let me check my email. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We did get an update. So King Cobra writes back. This third email. So I just got a call back from my fleet manager, and they are mad because I emailed safety, but I could have sworn that was a health and safety concern. Isn't it? I put that in the form of a question. That's why I said, in the middle of a global health crisis, isn't this a safety, health and safety concern? Question mark. And then if they say no, I would explain why not. Does this sound like quality hygiene? This might even be one where I'd say this before. Report to the Department of Health and Safety. Maybe even take pictures, dates of all of that. Like, I think we've had several folks who've talked about either they did that themselves or they are in a region where that happened and they saw where it did produce a constructive result. Sometimes some white people came on television and publicly shamed the white people who were in charge, who were allowing these type of unsafe conditions to fester, and they changed their conduct and made everybody improve and, you know, start doing things in a correct, safe manner. I've seen where that's worked consistently. So it might even be worth, you know, if they, you know, what do you mean? This is not about health and safety. I wipe my nose on everything. Oh, take that email, in fact, in addition to your reports, and contact the Department of Health and Safety. And I mean, especially if you're doing driving, you're going cross country in all these different areas and coming in contact with all these different people. Like, my goodness, come on, come on. Document question and reporting to health and safety. Nothing is more important than safety, in my view. I mean, it does not get more flagrant than what you have reported, sir. King Cobra. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. Decode 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks, thoughts, observations, suggestions on what has been shared thus far, how the vaccine is troubling your work environment, and or just workplace conduct in general in the midst of all this, mask and all the rest of it.
Can I be heard?
Nick over the road? Yes, sir.
If no one else want to speak, I just wanted to address some of the things that I heard the caller say about the service. Because what I want to do, I want to kind of lay down the reasoning and a template so any of us can use it wherever we are. I think the most important thing outside of the two-way radio app is to have a hotline. And I really, really wanted to get that established. That's why I just paid for that out of my pocket. It's just real simple. Like, if I see red or blue lights, I put my hazard lights on, and I could tell Bixby, call the on-code hotline. And Bixby will just call. The call taker will simply say, what's your name, your member number, your location? And then they'll tell you, take a deep breath, relax, codify, don't fight, don't fuss, don't flee. Just want your ticket so you could go on. And they mute the line, and you're just looking for key things or listening for key things like, get out of the car, you're under arrest, things like that. It's not really to get involved or for us to call, for me to call your emergency contacts, and they showing up at the traffic stop. It's not really for that. Really, it's just so that that our attempted men and women, mothers and fathers, sisters, brothers, so that we don't come up missing, because it's a lot of us coming up missing for various reasons, and we talk about them here. I really wanted to get it staffed or somebody available 24 hours a day, And if I could get 42 people to do 4 hours, that'll cover an entire week. 84 people. That's once every 2 weeks or just twice a month doing 4 hours. Believe me, I want to get this codified. If whatever you do now, if you build websites, if you know a professional dispatcher that's willing to give a training 4 hours a week for the people who want to learn how to use a two-way radio or know how to handle situations like the young lady whose mother died. She was in a group home. Her mother died. They sent her to school the next day. She was on her phone in the classroom. They called the school resource officer, which is basically a cop. I guess she was just so distressed over the situation of losing her mother, he snatched her out the chair and threw her across the room. This young lady might call the hotline and just say, hey, my mother died yesterday. The call taker asked you, where are you at school? That's not a place for a young lady to be when her mother died. You know, if there's a professional dispatcher who knows how to do call taking and can train us, just volunteering 4 hours a week or 4 hours every 2 weeks, that'd be awesome. Whatever you do, if you do videos, I want to do a video where we address the situations with like Sandra Bland. If she could have called the number, because she was just upset. That cop actually came back with a warning. It wasn't even a citation. He just wanted to give her a warning. But she was so upset, nobody was there for her to call. So to tell her to calm down, take a deep breath, don't fight, don't fuss, don't flee. She fussed. Sad that it ended the way that it did. The tragic arrangement issue, because the suspected Ray soldier is known for taking things and twisting them, like I said, when it comes to our health and safety, I think it's real important that we not involve those outside of being black. For some reason, I think like these the other races or whatever, they have a number outside of 911 that they can call. Having a relative that you can call, I've thought of that too. But, you know, we take showers. We have jobs where we can't have our phone on us. It's situations where if you're not dedicated to monitoring that phone, you can miss a call and it could cost us our lives. And I think that's everything. I mean, like I said, you don't have to use this service. You could do this yourself. I just really want us to stop coming up missing. Thank you for letting me speak.
Much obliged, Nick Over the Road. Much obliged for the details. Details are, that is everything. One detail, there is only one race. The white race. There's only one reason for belonging to a race: to practice racism, white supremacy. And if all the people that we have here are classified as not white, no one here belongs to a race either. That one is one that causes lots of confusion. Racists are most to blame for that too, but very important, one race, the white race. But much obliged for the details. And if folks want to volunteer, drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. I can forward along your information if you would like more details, get more information, what it's all about, what it involves for those 4 hours, or whatever you want to sign up to do. Drop me a line. I will pass your information along.
One more thing, Gus. This right now is really just me and a couple of other people. I would like to have like a board of directors, and this is not public. This is private. I haven't gone for 501c3. I haven't did any of that because it involves, you know, suspected racists, race soldiers, you know, and I don't want to get it taken, or I don't suggest that you get, you know, whatever. If you take this temple and do it, I suggest you know, you don't get it taken because they good for investing money and taking it over. And yeah, I mean, member requirement committee, board of directors, all of that stuff. Right now is I'm wearing all of those hats, you know, program development, everything. I just do it when I can. If you guys want to put together a committee or we could, yes, please, I consider being on the board of directors. You know, I'm open for it. I'm very open for us continuing to live as long as we can. Thank you for letting me speak.
RWSWJ, much obliged. I did want to say thank you for the invite as well. I did want to say I do think it's important just in all endeavors of business. Like, I think white people have shown conclusively, I might be in error, but I did use that word deliberately, conclusively, they have a variety of different ways of stealing the intellectual property and or other creations of non-white people, whether they just take it directly with the strong arm robbery style and put you out of business and take over what you were doing. Lots of examples of that, allowing you to do it. And then they just get all the money from whatever it is that you're doing. Sometimes they can reverse engineer whatever it is that you're doing and figure out how you did it. And then boom. So it's a lot. Even listening to this broadcast right now and then, oh, we'll go do that. Or talk to somebody who used the service. Oh, they did what you call? God, interesting. Lots of different ways. So yeah, that's just, you have to kind of be system of racism, white supremacy. It's probably not going to be any secrets from white people. Anything that's worth knowing probably will not be able to shield that from them. So, yeah. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, suggestions, workplace racism related, line should be open. Proceed. See while folks are either spectating, getting their thoughts together. Let's see, we should be here for tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Compensatory call in. We'll catch up on the news and what have you from the last 7 days or so. Lots of court racist jokes all week long. It's been racist jokes. We have I think she's classified as white. I said that's the first question that I ask. Like, that's generally, all these years, that's generally the first question that I ask. But importantly, this time around next week, Gail Lukasik, I think that's how you say her name. I classified as white, but we'll verify next week. She wrote this book about how her, grandmother and mom were accepted as white. She calls it passing, accepted as white. And in the book, there are a number of different spots where both she and other of her family members are confronted with racist jokes. She talks about going to the library, I believe in Illinois. Going to the library, she's doing the genealogy research on her family. And one of the white people there who's like in charge of, I think she's looking at like census records from the early 20th century. And one of the library workers comes over and she's like, what is this B for? B for black, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes on, oh, the Negro. Oh, did you know the Negro about this? And she's just giggling away and And I guess our guest is saying like, man, I don't use nigger like that. And all of these jokes, like she's just talking like we're, which I've said for a long time, the racist joke, it is assumed if you're classified as white, like, of course, white supremacy. That's what this is all about. And that you're not ignorant about all of this. But that'll be for next week. Anywho, if folks are spectating because they do not have any problems with regards to workplace racism. Well, make sure you invest. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. It is also linked below alongside Cash App, Venmo. Much obliged to all the folks who have invested 12 plus years that we have been on the air, hopefully providing constructive information on white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works. And certainly, if you are spectating and are not having any problems, well, hopefully that means you are getting all of your raises, promotions are being compensated in accordance with all of the brilliance, know-how that you display on a daily basis. So yes, you should hopefully be able to invest. Let's see. So we're tomorrow, Gail Lukasik. I think it's like Tuesday. I have to double check. I'll let you all know tomorrow. Gail Lukasik, having a white person on the program. We can be ready with our questions and some of the other programs for next week. We'll do that tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So we got three emails from King Cobra. He's talking about the situation at work, driving, getting training nonetheless. Folks, had any other suggestions on that before we wrap up? That would be grand as well. I'm of the opinion, like, it's not knowing how everything proceeded up to where we are now, at least where we got the last update. There's not even anything that I can pick out changing other than I would have included. We're in a health pandemic, like that would have been front and center. Like, this is not just, you know, pre-COVID times where, you know, everybody, you know, hugged each other and never washed their hands and all the rest of it. Like, major hell that we got to wear a mask. We got to get a vaccine for a reason and all the rest of it. I don't know if they have to be vaccinated in their residence or for this job or what have you. But I mean, masks and all this upheaval and what have you for the last 2 years is for a reason. So hygiene, cleanliness, all of that should be of, you know, the uppermost importance, keeping employees safe, right? Everything in the form of a question. But yeah, there's nothing I would change other than I would have added that. And then, you know, if they say that this is not a safety concern, why is that the case? And have them explain, like I said, I would contact, you know, the Department of Health or whatever it is, because I mean, with all of the documentation about what's happening, and just ask that to be explained. I think, I mean, they wig out, like, in certain area. Like, if your mask is askew, like, whoa, you might be thrown out of the restaurant or anything. So, I mean, all of this egregious behavior, like, are you serious? How is this not a safety concern? And detail it for me. Maybe even put it in writing for me. How is this not a safety concern? But if you have any thoughts on that situation or if there are any improvements, maybe anybody hearing all of that, if there's, you know, any adjustments you would make to get a better result, that would be good. Or any reflections on your own situation.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have some updates or some reports I'd like to share. The first one was, I don't know if I shared this particular one where we just had the National Bosses Day holiday, but it's a, it's one in conjunction with that day. The following day, where the supervisor, the white woman, came in, and they had all of the white women, many of them that's on that picture, Gus, had decorated her office, and, you know, I had refused to sign the card. You know, I said, I'm going to have to pass on this one. And they were even making tacky comments. But anyway, the supervisor came in and she replies, as soon as she sees it, she says, "Oh, wow, this is nice, but I do feel bad for," and then she named the black female janitor, like assuming, I guess, that she's going to clean all of that up. But apparently she ended up vacuuming it, all of the confetti and the party-like decoration or decorative items that were on the door frame and all over the chair and everything. So the plantation dynamic right there. The next one is the person that they've been calling Princess, a white woman, another clique member. It seems like a lot of the other white women, not too many, but some of them have been calling her that. And one particular one that is in a tragic arrangement and has three offspring from black males sits to the front counter. So as I stated before, she has a pattern of coming to the segregated area where there are the dark-skinned people, talking to a black female, saying what this female, the other white woman, is cursing her out and stuff like that, you know? And it seemed like the white women are, I guess taking her seriously or whatever, but she's over there venting to the black female like she can do something. So, you know, I just came to the conclusion that's probably, she may be a little bottom tier compared to them in regards to those white women that the warden has all over, scattered all over the office. So they've been having a spot, you know, and a feud with each other. But I still don't really trust what she's doing because, you know, they go walking on their breaks with each other. And you know how a lot of white supremacist suspects, they like to say the things they do are concealed under joking and everything. But this was one I wanted to take note of. She made a, Freddy Krueger and what's the other guy? Michael Myers. reference metaphor, like saying that I guess she was looking for a ride home and she was asking the black female, like, could you take me home or whatever? So she was walking away with a headset. Like, oh, okay, all right. I don't seem like you're listening to me or whatever. Because I guess the victim was on her phone and she walked up. So I guess I'm going to have to be like Michael Myers or Freddy. And I'll be waiting for you on the corner or something like that. But don't worry, I ain't going to cut you too much or something. And she didn't look up. So she made that comment toward the black female. And I just continued just looking at the computer, just doing my work. So they, you know, engage with each other like that at times. My next one is the new person. I've heard her make the comment where a lot of white people will say, oh, well, you know, don't take any offense to this. the first one was where she was showing, I guess, certain T-shirts, I guess, from a business or something that she uses or she customizes, personalizes T-shirts and like keychains and stuff to a victim of racism. And I can see the phone, what's on the phone. So she's showing this to this victim. And before she shows this particular image, like everything else before this is saying stuff like love and, you know, faith and all of that. I guess like Christian related themes, you know, sports teams, stuff like that. And she gets to this one and it says, well, she says, well, you know, don't get offended. I already know it's something with nigga in it. So that's my brain. And so she shows the picture, and it's a keychain that says "nigga," and then on the back it says "you through," nigga, the letter U, and then T H R U through, nigga, you through. So, you know, nobody says anything, and she just keeps going to the next picture. And the next one she said was when a white woman walked over offering candy, right? Candy corn, if anybody's heard of that particular candy. And the same person, right? She was like, oh, well, don't you get offended or anything. And I didn't. She said it toward me. But I heard that a lot of black people don't really eat candy corns. And I say, you know, I don't really care about that. I don't care what the food is or, you know, what you may have heard. I don't eat any of that here. You can ask her. And she says, yep, he doesn't. He has a reputation of not eating any sweets and stuff. So that's how that one played out. There was a customer that came in, a male customer, non-white, non-black, categorized, I think. And, you know, he was waiting to get somebody to help him out. And, you know, I put my hand up. I said, I can help you, sir. And I helped him out. I got him some coffees and everything. I told him about his case. And, you know, after he walked out, the victim, black female, she walks by me. You know, I took care of the customer. She says, oh, you know, I figured that was the person that you helped last time, and he'd rather be helped by a guy or a man because that's how they are in their culture. I gave no response because I don't get, how does that make sense? Because he was waiting for whoever to help him. But, you know, I didn't say anything to that. I don't think that needed a response. If I could share one last thing, there's been some records I've been wanting to read, and this one is from January 18th, 1859, and they have on this site on the ancient records, where you can see the transcriptions, like instead of the cursive writing they had back then, because it's kind of hard to read that, it's not really that legible. But this one, it says, nevertheless, that the said Susan Hickson, so Susan Hickson was married to, I think, Levi Hickson. So this is like a probate type of heir type of document, apparently. So it says, nevertheless, the said Susan Hickson reserved and retained to herself a lien upon the said Negroes, Henry, John, Betsy, Catherine George Jr., Lucinda Jane Jr., Alan Philip Abbey, above enumerated, as security for the annual payment of the said sum of $250, then this conveyance shall be void otherwise to remain in full force and effect, and provide also that until default by the said W.J. Pringle in performance of the said condition aforesaid, it may be lawful for him to keep and retain possession of said property and to use and enjoy the same. But if the same or any part thereof shall be attached at any time before payment and by any other creditor or creditors of the said W.J. Pringle, then it shall be lawful for the said Susan Hickson, which is the surviving wife of the white man, apparently, or slave master, I guess, that died. It says, to the said Susan Hickson, to take immediate possession of the whole said above named Negroes, or so much thereof as will be sufficient to pay the said sum during her lifetime to her own use and disposal, and witness thereof, I hereunto set my hand and affix my seal this first day of January, 1,858. So that's from January 18, 1859, and that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Well, much obliged, caller in Florida. That courthouse, man, you learn so much about the system of white supremacy while you are on the job in a variety of different ways. Like, wow, the ancient records, like, man, like, even that job, like, man, spend some time down here. Next time they're divvying out duties, like, I could hang out down here all day long and just read and document, dust a little bit, and refurbish if anything has to be transcribed or updated. Like, man, the learn the whole history of racism, white supremacy in North Florida. Like, wow. Let's see. The National Boss, I didn't even know that was a, like, even pretend holiday. National Boss Day. National Boss. I didn't even know about that one. So they have all this slop that they bring in, party favors and all that other nonsense. I am so, like, anti-celebrate, because it just becomes that, where you just end up having that sort of thing every other day, every other week. We got to do birthday celebration, and now we got to do a Halloween party, now we got to do a Christmas party, now we got to do a National Boss Day. We're like, come on. This is not what we signed up for. Like, let's just get to work. Like, we didn't come here to fraternize, or did we? I guess maybe some of you did. I came here to work. That's what we listed, not coming in here and having tea and biscuits every 5 minutes. Like, come on. And then the plantational aspect of all this, like, oh man, oh, is the Negro's got a, oh, I feel so sorry for her. Well, let's get some more cupcakes. Like, come on, come on, come on. Like, and for what? To come and dump all that on the floor for what? Have the cupcakes at home. Do that and wait until do happy hour after you leave work. Go do that someplace else. If they really felt bad for her, they would get it up themselves. I'm sure they could go find a broom. Like, it's not that hard. They probably got all kinds of little knickknacks and vacuums, handy vacs, and all the rest of it. They could have got that stuff or not put it down in the first place. They could have had their party without throwing confetti all over the floor that they have to leave for a nigger to get up. Then pretend that they feel guilty about it. Let's see. Princess. I don't know how they got that nickname. Like, that coming and hanging out in the segregated section, and especially if she's there, some sort of tragic arrangement type thing going on, like, that is so dangerous for the victims there. Like, she's coming over the gossip, ostensibly talking about how, you know, the other white people are mean to her or whatever the case is. Like, talk about not saying a word. I would not want to fall into any of that. Like, agreeing, disagreeing, laughing about, like, saying, why are you telling me this? Like, we're in the segregated section, barely keeping my job. I can't, you know, do anything to get the clique to behave. They terrorize me every day. Why are you telling me this? Like, so I can commiserate with you? Do you want me to say something? So then they get me like, oh, she was over there gossiping. Like, I heard Gus, he was over there gossiping with Princess. And no, like, I wouldn't even want you to think of me as, like, someone receptive. Like, oh yes, Gus, you won't believe what she said to me. They're like, I don't even care. Like, I am working. I certainly am not in human resources or any, I'm not her supervisor. Like, not the person to speak to at all. That's just gossip. I do not ever, I don't want anybody, black person, non-white person, my mom, I do not want them coming to gossip to me in the workplace. Especially not a white, and a white person in a tragic arrangement. Like, are you serious? Get the step in. Go back over to the other side. You don't need to be around the segregated people, confusing us further. All of that. I said that last week. We had a caller who was talking about Halloween, and, you know, if you have offspring, I do not. But they were saying, you know, getting your offspring so that they're not all caught up in the festivities. Oh, I got to celebrate Halloween, blah, blah, blah. What is this holiday about? What do we think of? Blood. Killing somebody. Candy corn. Scary movies. Freddy Krueger. Killing somebody. Same thing I said before. None of that is constructive, right down to the candy corn. None of that. They talk about obesity and COVID every day, and then they want to dump a pound of candy corn on you. Like, come on. Nothing about that is constructive. Now we're in the hall. He said the young lady couldn't even hear us. Looked like she was on the phone or whatever the case. Maybe she was doing one of the cow's tricks. You put the headphones on so it looks like you're listening, but you're not, you know, listening at all. Maybe that's what she was doing. Either way, she's in her own world, her own workplace, own human space, moving about her day. The white woman, oh, say, you give me a ride? Hey, oh, you can't hear? Oh, okay. Have to do an old Freddy Krueger. I'll be waiting on the corner and carve you. Like, what? That's what I said before. All that violence in the workplace. Brent Mack, I said, take that sort of thing seriously. Like, why are we in the courthouse talking about chopping people up, much less a coworker? You're asking for a ride. She probably didn't hear you. Excuse me. Just want to know if I could get a lift. That's all. Sorry to interrupt. That's normal procedure. Workplace decorum, they call it. Not, what? You didn't hear? Oh, I'm talking about chopping you up and butchering you. I watched Freddy Krueger all weekend. That's the Halloween. I said that is the holiday of white supremacy racism right there. Probably got that in one of the movies. Kill somebody and stuff them in the air. Well, it is. It's all in and kill somebody and stuff the body in the trunk of the car or some under the septic tank. Let's see. Now, speaking of inappropriate in the workplace, now they come around. You start off with, now don't be offended by this. You already know this is not appropriate for the workplace. It's no explanation needed. Like, we don't need a tutorial. You don't need sensitivity training. When you have to start off with that, don't be offended. And even then, it's putting the onus on you. It's not, now I know this is inappropriate for the workplace. I know I shouldn't be showing it. Now, you don't be a little child about all this. Now, look at this. Why are you, now, it's a whole lot of questions that could be asked about that. Like, why do you have this? Why are you showing to us? Why are you showing this to us in the courthouse? It's lots of, we just go on and on and on. Like, is this appropriate? And just on and on and on and on and on. But we start, now don't be offended by this. That document, write that one down. Maybe see if I can get a picture. Nigga youth and now, that sort of thing. You got a keychain of this, and you're so proud of this that you got to bring this in and show it off and brag to your coworkers, even show it off to the black people. That reminds me of Shaft being written by a white man. When I said, now, who was this written for? I might be totally unrelated, but that's the first thing that I thought of. Nigga, you through. And she thinks that's so funny. The candy corn in the workplace. I just said it's nothing constructive about Halloween. Absolutely nothing. Let's give out some candy, some cavities and obesity all in one swoop. Get all that rolling. Woo, that'll be great. And then turn around and talk about COVID. Next sentence. We don't need COVID. I mean, we don't need COVID either. We don't need candy corn, Snickers. When I was confused, I had a whole candy dish full of Snickers in my office for this time of year. Little bite-sized ones. I had those in my office, my little dish. Every famous people come out. Oh, I love Snickers. Chocolate Welsing moment. I would not encourage any of that. Like, worst idea ever. Like, just have what you need. And then a reputation. I don't eat in the workplace. You already know this. I don't care if it's candy corn, multigrain muffins, smoothies, pizza day, shrimp lo mein, sushi, whatever it is, I'm good. And I mean, that is the best thing ever when this guy's the one. Yeah, he's not going to eat it. We've already tried. We got the force feeding implemented. Him and that coon janitor, both of them. We try and give them food and they're too good. Too uppity. Niggers that won't even eat anything. Cool and the gang. Thank you kindly. You know that's what it's going to be. If I work here for the next 50 years, I'm cool. Don't even have to give an egg. I'm cool. I'm cool. Thank you kindly. Just having a code, and that way you don't have to worry about any of that. Now, does this person have the same issues that we talked about before? Does this person wash their hands? Do they even believe that, you know, the whole COVID situation is going on? Not to mention, you know, did they sabotage all of this? Like, oh, we're going to get them to go around and make it look good. And we saved up the bottom half of the candy corn as laxative or whatever. Like, I'm good. Thank you kindly. Same thing I said for a long time now. If you're employed, you're in the workplace, presumably you get a paycheck, you have funds to eat. Let's see. Yeah, that is the ancient records. Like, wow, that is nobody. I don't know who the people are who maintain that area. Make sure everything is, you know, documented so that people can go back and find that. You talked about the white woman who came and she was doing research on all of that before. I don't know who's in charge, but I mean, they certainly are not ignorant about racism. The niggers are collateral. The bank, we talked about all that before. The niggers are the bank. That's an Edward Baptist. The half has never been told. We read that on the book club. Maybe should be top 10, but he talked about the exact same thing. The niggers are the bank of white supremacy racism. Can't be ignorant about any of that if you got detailed records of all of this throughout the state of Florida, in addition to the deeds where they got it in the covenant that we won't sell this property to a nigra and all the rest of it. Like, you're not ignorant about racism. You don't have to know all those details to practice racism, but I mean, hey, certainly the folks that maintain those records at the courthouse, PhD in white supremacy racism, at least for the state of Florida. Much obliged, caller at the courthouse. Always something to learn down there at the courthouse. Did any other folks have comments here that they wanted to get in? Suggestions, questions? No candy corn. This used to be one of my favorite times of the year. Like, I used to love the season, winter, even though it's autumn, so-called, but heading towards that way. And then get all of the candy for the season. Like, it's just candy, 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 candy all the way through New Year. Well, really, I was going to say New Year's, but it just continues right on into Valentine's. Like, you get a good solid 4 months of just binge eating, generally lots of junk food and garbage and candy, candy and nonsense for about the next 4 or 5 months. Like, avoid all of that. I already said, if those office parties and things are resurrected this year, I am cautiously avoiding gatherings. If I am a parent, ding, that would be the ad. I'm cautiously avoiding gatherings. As we are still in a pandemic, gotta include that. Still in a global pandemic, cautiously avoiding gatherings. Wish you all the best. And I'm not eating anything. They start creeping back into, oh, I made, you know, such and such cookies and gingerbread and all that. I'm good. Even if they bring in candy canes because they're wrapped and I'm good. Nothing. No need to. Some habits, we can let that go permanently. All of that. I'd even try and get out of the gift giving. If they do any of that nonsense, like, I don't celebrate, I don't participate in any of that, and don't feel like we should be forced to do any of the holiday rituals in the workplace. But sometimes that can cause ways they get really, you know, angered about people refusing to participate in these pagan rituals. But I would do my best to not let them be resurrected in full force, or at least not, or they'll happen without my participation. Say it that way. Much obliged for folks' participation this Friday evening. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Sobriety would be best. Said that a few times. Never be repeated too much. We need our brain computer for so many reasons. Being sober, that is the way to proceed. In addition to being sober, if you're going to be out and about, driving, whatever it is, be alert, especially, you know, now in the holiday season and all that. If it looks like somebody is out and being hostile and rowdy, exit. This is not a time for verbal confrontations with strangers. You should be thinking that this person may be armed. This person might have an entire cadre of folks who are armed, ready to kill. If you didn't leave your residence prepared to die and or kill, exit. Safe thing to do. It is way too tumultuous, everything that is happening right now. In addition to all that, if you're going to be in a vehicle, you are sober, you are buckled, you are not on the cell phone, just doing the small things to keep ourselves as safe as possible under extremely dangerous conditions. Brent Mack, attempted father, found murdered under a septic tank. Suspect his white boss, who's 66, by the way. All of that said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.